Vago con cuál. Sanonge. We welcome you and your team. I also understand we have students from the University of Venda. Robert Tanganez. I'm young Ken. Student America. So. Okay. I think what we'll do, Bamokwaza, by way of starting, will be to allow you and your team to introduce yourselves so that we know who is here. And I see that the Auditor General's office is here. We'll also allow them to introduce themselves and then to allow comrades here to introduce themselves so that we can then start with our program. Can I hand over to you and your team?
Thank you very much, Chairman and members of the committee. And, my name is J.P. Makwaza. J.P. standing for Johannes Pemuzi Makwaza. Johannes P. my slave name. Pemuzi P. my real grandfather name.
Okay. Good morning, Chairman. My name is Boyane Jahana. I'm the CEO of SAA. Okay. I'm with me. I have.
It's fine. Let them talk. Once he is, they can.
Good morning, Chairman. My name is Kumuzo Chadi, Compliance SAA.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Kenneth Belay, the Acting Chief Procurement Officer for SAA.
Good morning. My name is Siyakhula Vilakazi, Internal Auditor SAA.
Just do as you used to do when you were chairing in committee. Just switch on the mic and talk to it.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Peter Warwick. I'm a member of the board.
Okay.
Morning, Chair. My name is Arthur. Morning, Chair. My name is Akhtar Musa. I'm a non-executive on SAA's board.
Okay. National Treasurer.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. I'm Anthony Julius, and I'm the Deputy Director General in the National Treasury.
Okay, good morning, Chair. My name is Ravesh Rajwal, also from the National Treasury, responsible for transport entities.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Right.
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Polan Sobambela. I'm the business executive from the Auditor General.
Good morning, honorable Chair, honorable members. I'm Vikas Janus of Parijsburg, senior manager at the IG's office.
Good morning, Chair and the committee. My name is Olisa Zohala from the Auditor General.
Morning, Chair and honorable members. My name is Patrick Kubai, senior manager from the Auditor General.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Monique Kruger from the Auditor General.
Right, comrades, may we introduce ourselves. Start here in Gauteng.
Morning, Chair. My name is Saki Keka and I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Mia Mezelepoe, member of this committee.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Tabelo Chiwa, I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Kule Wasley, I'm a member of the committee.
Morning, Chair. Thank you for allowing me to join you. I'm R.A. Lees, Robert Alfred Lees. Alfred was my grandfather's name.
And you're not a member of this committee?
Morning, Chair. Domovio Mente, member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair. David Ross, present member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Chair. T.
Tim Bradishead from the great province of KwaZulu-Natal and a proud SCOPA member. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm Comrade Tim Agodi. I chair the committee. We welcome you to this engagement. Remembering that last year we did an oversight visit to SAA. Except that I think there were two areas that we did not visit. That is SAA technical, as well as the HF's section. We still have every intention to finish that part of the leg, all things being equal here in Parliament, so that our theory can be linked to what is practical and what is real. And all things being equal, once again, the honourable gentleman coming in is the Deputy Minister of Finance. Welcome, Comrade. I was saying that last year we... Right. Okay, so all things being equal, I think we would want to visit so that what we're discussing here and what is practically happening on the ground can be reconciled, at least from our side as a committee. And I'm sure you will all agree that the situation at the airline is a very grave one, to say the least. And the concern that Parliament has, and I'm sure the country as a whole, is how do we get the airline out of the hole that it is in? So that it becomes an asset to the state to allow the country to achieve its strategic objectives around it. Unlike the current situation that we're in. And we know that wherever we are, it's a product of decisions, actions and inactions by individuals who have been tasked with ensuring that the airline fulfills the strategic objectives that the country expects of it. But what we have is the opposite. Why and how do we get it out of that situation? I think that's a fundamental question. But I think as we engage, the gravity of the situation must never be lost. And whatever responses we give to the questions, they must be motivated by one thing and one thing alone, ensuring that Parliament has clarity of the issues and the challenges at hand and how we collectively seek to sort the issues out. So from this side, there's a full appreciation of what is at stake. And we would want from your side a demonstration as well of that recognition. So that as we converse, we have that in the back of our minds. And that demonstration will be borne by the frankness with which you deal with the issues. Accuser ngobuthakathi ngoba siyazi ukuthi ubuthakathi akekho umuntu ovumayo ukuthi yathakathi kusho noma onganayo kwamhlaba uyalingana which is okay. But insofar as the facts and the issues surrounding SAA are concerned, we want frankness. We don't want to be given alternative facts. Let's all have the facts, and let's all together say how to move forward. I think that will be important. Otherwise, from our side here, we have every intention to have an early day. We have a long day this afternoon in Parliament. So finishing early here would actually assist us. But we'll be in your hands. We'll be in your hands to depend on what you want. Now, without further ado, I want to go to my comrades who have been tasked with specific areas of focus. You are there, Chair, you are there, CEO, you will talk to us. Let me hand over to Honorable Ross. To deal with this area of focus. Honorable Ross, we are in your hands. But before, can I make an appeal? Please switch off your cellular phones. Don't put them on silent. Just switch them off like I've done so that they don't trouble us during the course of the hearing. Because for sure, as the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, if you didn't switch off your phone, it will definitely ring during the course of the meeting. So please help us. Yes, Ross.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the perhaps unexpected opportunity to open proceedings today. But let me make the opening remark that we all are very well aware of the grave and gravity situation, like you've explained in your opening remarks. With regards to specifically the solvency question, question in South African Airways and the liquidity problems experience. But let me start with perhaps in my mind, a gross violation in terms of the Public Finance Management Act in not submitting the annual statements timely. The SAA was audited by the AG South Africa for the first time in 2016-17, but South African Airways did not submit the 17 financial statements on the legislative deadline of 31st of May 2017. Now, the reasons that were given, and that's what we've picked up in the press and elsewhere, is that the financial statements were only submitted in auditing 31st October 2017. The delay is because, and I would like you to clarify this one, please, the chairperson of the board, the CEO, was due to challenges in confirming the going concern assumption. And this is where the important issues of the shareholder comes to play, that there was it was the prerequisite of injecting further equity, and I believe that is 10.1 billion, and then also confirming loans from the banks. Now, my question to you would be, is this the manipulation of, in terms of an audit outcome then? Why? Because could you not submit the audit statements on time, but waiting for improved liquidity and solvency issues before you submit these delay? And then for the record, Chairperson, I think as a committee, a public accounts committee, we should be very, very aware that the integrated report today that was handed over to Parliament is the first time that even people on the South African Airways, on the committee, Finance Committee, has never seen this integrated report. It has not been formally submitted anywhere. And I believe that's a violation in terms of not submitting your annual reports timelessly, also an integrated report, waiting for improved financial positions. And I believe that, in my mind, from an accounts position, is manipulating on audit outcomes. I'd like to have your response on this here.
But I'm aware of that. I was going to talk to that later. I didn't want it to cloud specific issues. Property, plant and equipment, inventory and information. I think that's your narrow area of focus, but let me just switch off your mic so that they can respond.
The chairperson of the committee and members of the committee, I think the comments that have been made are actually quite pertinent to the situation that we find ourselves. But maybe, Chairman, if you and your committee may allow me to give you a scenario that will give you an environment in which South African Airways find itself, and then we'll deal directly with the questions that have been raised. But before I do that, let me just show you, Chairperson.
I think the broad environment in which you operate, we have a good thing. We had an engagement with the Auditor General last week for almost 3 hours, more than 3 hours. So we're quite clear about the context. But maybe just talk to his question directly, because I want us to move from that question so that he can go into his areas of focus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe then let me defer to the CEO to deal with the issues that have been raised.
Thank you, Chair. Part of the reason, as we have indicated, that led to the delay of submission of the financial statements was with regard to some of the subsidiaries, SA Technical specifically. There were issues specifically around the transactions that we had to still process and clear in terms of working on SA Technical in terms of the shares as well as the decisions that had been taken to regularize in the past as part of the audit. So it was not the SAA main headline accounts that were delayed. Those were done and completed. But we needed to make sure that SAA Technical also comes through as part of the audit process. This is what we've been working with the AG. So it was important that we go through the detail of the various transactions at SA Technical, because SA Technical is a critical asset of SAA. It carries our licenses. If we have not dealt with it in the appropriate manner, then it will trigger a number of ramifications for SAA. So the only delay was around airships and SA Technical, which are subsidiaries that made the delay in submission of the financial statement. I'm not sure after if you want the chair of audit if you want to add something.
Okay. No, that's fine. Let's read it. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. That's fine. Chairperson, just before I dig into the important issues of assets and asset management, let me just then for the records indicate to you that the overall audit outcome has regressed and that there were significant findings. And I'm going to dig into some of these significant findings, which are structured under property, aircraft and equipment, and inventory, and then my colleagues will take it further in terms of maintenance costs. But if you allow me to start with property, aircraft and equipment. And I would like to use the AG's document, and I'm quite sure you've seen that, in terms of the very serious finding that South African Airways Group did not adequately review the useful lives and residual values of property, aircraft and equipment at each reporting date. And that's a reporting in terms of the International Accounting Standards, number 16. Why was this not done?
Chair, from the let me first address the detail around this. When you look at the aircraft, there's one aspect which we worked with the Auditor General. The aircraft from the practice at SAA has been that you see it as one asset, and therefore you've got a bachelor's value of it in terms of the value of the aircraft. However, when you look at the accounting standard, part of the audit done by AG was that we needed to break the aircraft into components, because certain parts of the aircraft carry different values, because some of the components of the aircraft are what you call rotables. They can be moved and they can be much more newer, and then it does impact the overall value of the aircraft. So that is where what we spoke about, implementing the accounting standard with the AG. So we have taken action then in this regard to start working on the asset management, making sure that we componentize the valuation of assets at the aircraft level. And this is the decision we've made. And this is what has been the practice at SAA, but the AG's audit has given us insights in terms of what more can we do to improve. So you take the aircraft as a whole, that's what we used to do, but obviously in the discussion with the AG, there was a sense that the different components of the aircraft carry different values because some of them may be newer, so you need to break it down into components so that you can get to the real value of the asset.
Thank you, Chair. Just in a follow-up, could you explain to me what exactly is the breakup in terms of components? Just the broad overview in terms of the different components of an aircraft there. And just noting that you have 52 aircrafts in South African Airways, and 10 in Mango and 2 in South African Cargo. Are we talking about the 52 aircrafts in South African Airways specifically, when you break it up in components? And do you have perhaps a value in terms of the breakups?
We're talking about the portfolio of aircraft. There were 64 as part of the asset base of the group. I'm not sure if we've got the values with us. Is your group? Do you have?
No, the values, no, we don't have them with us.
And I suppose that's why you're qualified on them. But continue, Ross.
No, Chairperson, are you going to, you can't supply the values of the components?
No, we...
not yet, but you can do it.
No, we've got the values. The document, the full accounting standard is there.
Okay.
So I thought the honours member was asking me to give the value now. So I don't have it with me now, but the whole accounting asset base is there. What we need to do is to reevaluate the component levels. For example, if you have an aircraft, parts of that aircraft may have newer parts. Those parts are rotatable. So we need to look and say what parts are new in that aircraft to get to a certain value of the overall aircraft. That piece of work is what you need to reconcile at component level. But the values of assets and aircraft are there with us. We've got them in the database.
Thank you, Chairperson. CFO, the detailed governance framework needs to be implemented. That's a recommendation from the AG. Is this implemented as we speak? Are you in the process of detailing a governance framework that was not implemented in the past? And that needs to set out the management of spare parts as well as reporting requirements and adjustment protocols to the systems that need to be followed when they are needed. And it talks about the recommendations, a detailed analysis of spare parts and an asset register that is credible. How far are we down the line in terms of implementing those recommendations?
We are very advanced. We have solicited additional support in SAA to be able to give us more resources to do this. Part of what we are doing, we are reconciling two registers. One is the SAP, which is the primary source of record when you do transaction. Then you've got MEMIS, which is a logistics system that SAA has always used. And then you've got a newer logistics system that allows us to actually be much more efficient as a maintenance and repair organization. We call it EMOS. So in the implementation, the reconciliation between the three databases has been the issue, and that's what we're cleaning up. It therefore leads to some of the challenges that are being highlighted by Auditor General around the inventory. When you migrate to EMOS, there were certain spares that were not more relevant into the new, in terms of our fleet, which were not migrated into EMOS, but they still remain on the SAP. So cleaning up and reconciling the two databases is what had not been done at the time of the audit, and we've got teams on the ground now doing exactly that, which is critical for our operations.
Thank you. Just as a follow-up, one of the root causes then in terms of these asset management units, it was understaffed, and that's what we also experienced when we did inspection in loco at South African Airways. As a result, basic disciplines such as physical verifications and conditional assessment of assets are not performed periodically. That is physical work that has to be done. Is the understaffed issue addressed as we speak? I remember vaguely there were only two persons in the whole spare parts department when we did visit. They were not well trained in terms of the systems. And I now hear about the AMOS system, which is migrated, all the information migrated into the AMOS. Are those people now qualified to run the AMOS system as we speak?
Chair, we have had the training of staff on AMOS. There are challenges with AMOS still around cleaning the databases and bringing greater efficiency in how the materials handling has been modernized. We have commissioned the physical audit of the stock at SAPS to actually be able to do the reconciliation between the primary source of the database, which is SAP, as well as AMOS. So the target has been to complete this. The inventory has been the inventory manager has been appointed in April to handle this, and last week already we're doing the first review of the physical stock and inventory management. So it's in our focus to make sure that the inventory management process is improved, but also how we configure SET from a logistics point of view, because when you run an MRO, it's a factory. So you have to have the proper logistics system, making sure the departments are structured correctly. So these are the priority areas we are doing to make sure that the issue of inventory doesn't arise again, Jeff. But work is being done already. People are on the ground. We're appointing managers to do this, but also there's additional support around materials handling between the various parts of the offset in terms of the value chain of maintenance and repair.
Thank you, Jefferson. My assessment is that there's physical progress in terms of verification of the stock. Is that correct? It's now being done, and you've indicated there's an inventory manager. Is there a specific task given to specific people, and what can you give me the name of the managers that will do the assessment in terms of the stock, seeing that it was never done before?
What we have done, Chair, in this regard, we have reconfigured the all materials handling part of SAT to make sure that the material handlers, as the stock moves from different parts, whether you're doing line maintenance, you're doing engines repair, so there's a common thread that runs through, and then this person managing that portfolio. We have appointed Silas Matsunda as a lead in that area, but also we have taken Sakit Low to really look at the operations to actually align at the project to make sure that we tie it together, covering both materials handling as well as inventory to bring better efficiencies within SAT. So there's a lot of focus. I must say, Chair, the big part is going to be to reconcile AMOS with SAP and making sure we clean up. And so far, we're doing manual audits to make sure that we have a handle on inventory. But we need to integrate AMOS completely with SAP so that there's less pain in execution and the database is managed seamlessly. So far, that's a big piece of work with talks to technology that we need to conclude.
Thank you, my follow-up.
And both of you do me a favor. After asking your question, just switch off your mic, because if both your mics are on, you are on autopilot, and otherwise we'll just go on and on and on. Okay, continuous.
Thank you, Chair. That's what I'm trying to avoid, to have is on autopilot. It's not a good remark. Chairperson, the journals are processed on the South African Airways accounting systems to make the two accounting systems reconcile. Do you have a component of the AG office at SAA currently that oversee proceedings trying to work towards a better audit outcome? In my engagement with the Auditor General, I was informed that it's not official, there's not an official delegation at South African Airways, but there is a presence of the Auditor General at South African Airways to assist and to help. Do you welcome that initiative from the Auditor General? And can we look forward to some better results in terms of the asset management? Are they involved in the asset management, reconciling the journals and seeing that we have the correct assets, asset numbers as were given to the AG in the past? Where there was doubt that it's not correct.
The AG has presence as part of the audit process at SAA, and I must say that we welcome the audit outcomes from AG because they also give us very specific pointers of where we need to focus on as part of the restructuring process we're dealing with, especially around systems of control and overall supply chain and logistics. So we have a very collaborative and working relationship with them, We have to do the work of getting things right as SAA, but then what AG does, they give us a form of an assurance to say, are things working right? Are we doing the things that we committed to do? So on the ground, the teams are busy working on all the snags that that came out of the audit, but also preparing, busy working on the next audit cycle that we're in. Okay. And we also have appointed additional support, because we do have capacity constraints at SAA, to support the finance team to deal with some of the snags that were highlighted.
Chairperson, I would just like to ask my question with regards to the impairment issue and the value of the asset register. The impairments, is it now being taken into account? In terms of the root causes, the AG indicated there are no policies and procedures in place to address how the impairment should be identified, calculated and disclosed for the various classes of assets at South African Airways. Could you give me an indication with regards to that, and also specifically is working on the reconciling the journals in terms of the systems, because I think that's quite important. And then also noting that most of your fleet of the, I think it's 52 aircraft that you fly in South African Airways, what is the percentage that you lease these aircrafts, and what impact do they have then in evaluating the value of your assets?
Chair, we have the issue of the policy in terms of valuation of assets, especially between SA and SAT. We have already started looking at that in terms of determining a fair value of assets, and a clear policy has been developed in that regard. We were reviewing it when we had SAT, the Kenneth, you were with me, I think the week before last. That work is being done from a policy point of view, because it's all about saying what methods, under what condition do you invoke a certain method of valuation of valuation of the assets. So that's what we have put the policy for guidance, for clarity. The policy is in place now. What, with regards to leasing, out of the 64 aircraft that SAA has as a group, 9 of them are owned, the rest are leased.
Switch off your mic. Sorry.
Chairperson, I'm just going to integrate the inventory questions also with the asset questions, just to make it easier, because in the findings of the AG, it states that South African Airways Technical measures its inventory at the lower of cost, and I'm just trying to get to the value of what value do you put on the leased aircraft and what value did you put on the owned aircraft. Of course it should be a different calculation. And then it comes to how you see how your assets should be structured. And we've seen in the press a lot of recommendations, that's even in the business rescue plan. It says, you know, in terms of your operational methodology, you should be restructured. But in terms of your assets, I think this committee will appreciate it if you can give us an indication as you see to the two schools of thought in terms of leasing aircraft and also owning aircraft, and perhaps if you accept both of these recommendations, both leased and owned, in terms of the values, in terms of the finances presented to us today. And I'm quite sure it could be in your report, but as I've indicated, we haven't seen the report beforehand. But if you can highlight those issues, because I think those are pertinent issues, it's issues that we need to discuss, and then also how you see it to be structured in future, perhaps as the chairperson indicated, to make South African Airways a viable business.
Chair, the question around the valuation of asset is addressed by policy. That the policy, because it was a case of clarity on what is the trigger point for which method of valuation of assets, and that's the policy has been defined now. There's clarity. It was impacting largely SAT, and that we've clarified. On the question that's being raised of lease versus buying of aircraft, the leasing and buying of aircraft is a financing decision. It's a product of your financial position at the balance sheet level. If your balance sheet is strong, and you have the ability to attract financing for your aircraft, and keeping in mind that the aircrafts are booked in production 5 years ahead of time. Now, if you have got a very strong balance sheet that allows you to get debt to support your acquisition of aircraft, so it's a choice. It's a choice you make because of the circumstance. At the same time, if you do not have a strong balance sheet position, your real option is around leasing of aircraft. I must also say, Chair, that when you look at some of the airlines globally, it's a mixed model. Some of the airlines that are bigger, they have a strong balance sheet, they would buy the aircraft, but also they would on-sell it to their leasing company, and then they lease back. It's a financing instrument, largely driven by your fleet requirements, but most importantly, your balance sheet position. If you do not have a strong balance sheet, your options are very, very limited. You are likely to land on the leasing side.
No, that's fine. In the case of SAA, we owned the aircraft and decided to sell them and lease them. So the origin of your position does not arise from the principle you're explaining. Whilst I hear you, I'm just saying let's not lose sight of the historical basis that put us where we are that has led to this question. All right? No, I don't want to respond. I'm just saying those facts must never be lost. That this fellow Coleman Andrews. Yes. Yes, Ross.
Yes, indeed, Chair, you're correct. We moved from ownership to a leasing agency to a certain extent. So we still have some aircraft in terms of being owned. But I'm just trying to make sure that we understand each other in terms of what your vision is. And you're quite correct. It's in the policy where this should also be formulated. Do you have a policy, a new policy that you could, or are you continuing with the old policies? Is policies in place in terms of the asset management? And how will that impact on perhaps the breakup of aircrafts like you've indicated? The value. Have you engaged in a new policy position yet or not?
Chair,
with regards to the asset management.
In terms of the evaluation of assets, what we have done, we have engaged with a new policy, and that's the basis of valuation moving forward. That's what we have discussed with SAT in terms of the basis on which you evaluate assets. That policy, because this was the gap, the part of the gap that the AG picked up to say, what is the policy that indicates which method of valuation do you invoke as you do evaluation of assets. So that's what we've done. We've put it together, the policy. So other than the part where we say we're going to have to break, componentize the evaluation of aircraft, the policy on its own doesn't bring material changes in asset values. But when you componentize the aircraft, then that's where there might be changes in asset values on the basis that there might be parts that are a lot more newer in the aircraft that we may not have taken account of in the previous evaluation. So that's what is going to come through as part of the finding that the AG has to say, break the aircraft into components and then pull the different parts of the component and aggregate it together into an asset. So we don't see significant movement in asset basis except when you componentize. And that's the work that's being done. That's why we ask for help to actually make sure we can fast track the work to bring capacity at SAA on and bed down this particular aspect.
All right, I would like you to...
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to belabor the point. It's just very interesting, Chair, to note
okay.
That we have a policy which is a product of a financial position, and we have new policies, which is encouraging. But then in your new policies and noting your financial position where there's a constrained position where you had to ask the government for an equity injection of $10 billion, do you foresee in terms of your asset management and how you would like to take or structure your fleet for the future, that you will engage with equity partners in this regard, or is it not part of your policy yet?
Chair, the issue of strategic equity partner, the shareholder had made pronouncement that in the mid-term budget policy statement last year, there was a pronouncement that SAA should look to find an SAP strategic equity partner. That is part of the conversation that are happening at the joint oversight forum that is chaired by the Deputy Finance Minister and co-chaired by the Chair of Finance Committee of SAA, Martin Kingston.
So that is looking at a portfolio of funding instruments for SAA. But I'm certain that the shareholder, once progress has been made, we should be able to make a pronouncement in that regard.
Chairperson, I just want to ask my last question with regards to the inventory and stock issues, and thank you for the questions and answers or for the answers. Just in terms of the root causes, general security controls over stock are weak. That is according to the Auditor General's report. And just to remind you that you have been in a year that we can engage with you in the last year that you are already busy with your turnaround strategy. And I mean, this is not a good finding for us. And stocks are weak and resulted in theft. And I'd just like to know the above concerns attributed to the risk of fraud. Now, in this regard, were there any consequence management for people involving in this risk of fraud? Or have you identified specific people in the stock area? And were there consequences? Was it enforced? Did you take action with regards to this?
Chair, the big part around stock management, inventory management, has been around putting systems in place, especially given the fact that SAA has been migrating from MEMIS to AMOS, where the two systems did not reconcile. Hence, we are doing a stock count physically to understand, to reconcile SAP with AMOS. As things stand today, we cannot say that stock has been stolen as it is today, but we have to reconcile and make sure that the two databases talk to each other. What obviously we will do...
I thought you would say right now we can't say that stock is not stolen, because the problem is stock that is not accounted for, isn't it?
Yes, Chair, which once we complete the reconciliation in terms of the physical count that we are doing now, it will give us a sense of what stock is missing. I must also say, Chair, to explain a bit of detail. In the stock, there is what is called rotables. Rotables are parts that are reconditionable. So some of the stock, they go to the aircraft and they come back, they get into the logistics system. Now, unless you have a very tight logistics system with a clear audit mechanism, so a part might be in an aircraft and you can't find it in the store and it didn't register. So this is why we are tying the two databases. Once we have done that...
Or the other way around might be that the part has been taken out of the store.
Absolutely.
That's where I wanted to go, because you seem to be moving away from it, and yet the bit that we saw at SA Express is that problem actually opens the gap for wrong people to do wrong things.
Chair, as we do the audit, where we need to tie the loop on the system so that we can actually see where the stock has been stolen. Where we find that there's been actions that are not appropriate at SAA and SAA Denka, we will take actions in that regard. And we are unequivocal about that. Some of the forensics reports that were before the board have already been actioned already in terms of other aspects of SAA and SAA Denka. That's an indication of the board and management who are committed to actually do the right thing already.
No, that's fine. I hear that part. It is the part you are minimizing around having wrong people who do wrong things. I said at the beginning, our problem is because of the actions, decisions, and inactions of individuals. Not policy, yes.
Yeah.
But policy is action by human beings at the end of the day.
Chairman, let me just confirm that if there is anything that is giving the board a serious level of consternation and worry and concern, is the whole issue of the issue of whether there is theft in the organization. And if there is theft, how big is it and what is the cost of that theft? To the extent that a month or so ago, if I may remember, where the board, I decided to appoint a forensic group made up of board members. The members of that team are Mr. Musa, who is the chairman of the audit committee, Mr. Kingston, who is the chairman of the finance committee, and Mr. Chiseve, who is a member of the board and the chairman of SAT. Because there is a serious level of concern that we don't have the full picture here. To be honest with you, Chairperson, I must state even now that we do receive anonymous SMSs to this effect, anonymous emails to this effect, and there's just no way that we can sit and do nothing about this. We want to get to the bottom of this thing. The culture that we're inculcating in SAA is a culture of zero tolerance for fraud, corruption, and that kind of thing. And until that committee has done its work, we won't have a proper handle of the magnitude of the problem. The truth, be told, is asking me as J.B. Magwaza, I'm concerned.
Okay. All right. Was that your last question or your follow-up?
Is that adequate? Chairperson, would you like me to quickly go through the IT environment, which is also part of my organization? Two questions. Yes, certainly. I just wanted to know your IT systems, and can I just feed to you the findings which are clustered together? Information technology, government structures are inadequate, the framework were not approved, certain governance committees and management forums had been constituted, but they were constituted in isolation and not part of a single integrated governance framework, and then there were over 160 IT systems in your organization not properly coordinated. Lack of adequate administration and management, lack of adherence to defined processes for implementation of changes across systems, and a lack of disaster recovery plan, which also poses a risk, and I think it's some issues that the board can also look into in terms of the IT management. My question to you is it your IT management, is it outsourced? Are you doing it in-house? With whom are you working? Is there improvement in terms of this? And what was the role of CETA, if any? Were there any assistance from CETA? And in terms of the recommendations from the AG, I'm quite sure you went through this, and is it being implemented? I think the chairperson, I've clustered everything together for 1 minute to appease you, and thank you for the opportunity.
No, thanks very much. Comrades, I'm just realizing that actually on that focus area, we can sit here for the whole day, and maybe realizing that maybe we'll need to have another engagement this time in the evening. Can you respond to that? And then I'll check with you, comrades, if there are any follow-ups on that part that he was dealing with.
Chair, thank you very much. I must say the state of IT in SAA, it's a mixed bag. There are different systems that work independently, so core airline systems that are working independently. The utilization of technology is very, very low, although there are quite good capabilities, whether it's database, the business intelligence system, whether it's Cognos or SAP. The level of utilization of technology is very low. Part of our early diagnostics, this is a diagnostics of a team that starts in November, is that it would appear that our analysis that technology has been applied without aligning the underlying business processes. So if you take those and superimpose onto old business processes, you get the results that you've got where you do not get benefit from an integration of IT. What we are doing now, the new CIO is starting 1 May. Very experienced, has been exposed to transformation of different companies. Because we're talking about capability and capacity to transform the business. So we are bringing resources. At the same time, the urgent matters which are around, for example, disaster risk recovery. We have two data centers within SAA. They are on the same campus. The standard is such that your disaster recovery center will be about 15 kilometers away from where your primary center is. But both of them are at the same campus. So there are processes that have been triggered around procurement now to look at the a partner will be able to do the DR part of it. So that work is being done from a quick, rapid transformation point of view. But we do have backup. The only risk is that it's on the same campus. So that is one. The second thing, Chair, that I also need to raise that has been raised is the testing of the disaster recovery system, in particular when it comes to the
the trading system, the global distribution system where the trading platform. Normally, those are cloud-based, hosted globally. Each and every time an airline gets asked to be part of the disaster recovery test, we've asked SAA to be included in the global test for the 2018-2019 financial year of testing of the global booking system. The short answer is that we are putting together processes and structures to actually make sure that the IT governance and systems of disaster recovery are in place. Its resources, its going for partners who are going to do the DRP for us in terms of the standard, because you don't build two data centers because you don't use the DRP all the same time. It costs you too much money. At the same time, really redefining IT governance processes. When the new CIO comes in 1 of May, part of his priority is to really modernize IT and make sure we can get value for money, including underlying business processes, because when you don't have business processes outlined, your IT investment becomes not very beneficial.
Well, you asked about CETA. Is CETA involved in your IT?
Not. Let me qualify this. There's CETA in terms of the State Information Technology Agency. There's CETA, which is the global airline property
network. No. We're talking about the state. The CETA, the state organ. Dealing with IT.
Not to my knowledge. What we know, we've got the CETA, the global one.
No.
We don't have IT. Not the State Information Technology Agency. Right. We don't have them.
Okay.
With us.
Fine. He was dealing with property, plants, and equipment, inventory, and information. The IT. So I'm trying to check, comrades, if there's anyone who wants to make any follow-up on any of these items. Just one quick short question. Yes, go ahead.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Just one short, short question. It's on the aircraft that are being leased. One will just want to have an interest in terms of how much do you pay for my for those leased aircraft.
Okay. The absence of any, let's get a response, and then Comrade Kuno, you will be next. Comrade Mente, are you having your hand up? Let me allow you to ask, so when they respond, they respond to everyone.
Thanks, Chair. Now, in addition to what has been asked in terms of the leasing of aircraft, if we were to take the money that we are leasing the aircraft with and try to get aircraft that are owned by us here at home, what is the variance and why would we not have our own aircraft?
All right. Just to put a rider, understand we, if I got it well, we're getting new aircraft. Are these leased or buy or bought? Do we own them or are they leased? So let's just respond to everything.
Chair, on page 106 of the report, we do highlight the leasing cost there. It's 3.1 billion rand for the total leasing cost for 2017. On the issue of lease versus buy in terms of the detailed analysis, it's the work that I would want to further analyze so that I can give the exact numbers. I need to do say though that in terms of the current balance sheet position of SAA, even if it would be beneficial to buy the aircraft, the balance sheet would not support that transaction. So I would want, if possible, Chair,
to be able to refer to the detail of the analysis of lease versus buy, assuming that we'll be able to have the strong balance sheet to support any transaction of that sort. I don't have that analysis with me today. But we also know that the balance sheet position of SA today would not support any transaction of that level unless we do the recapitalization or transform it completely. But I would want to do the analysis and prevent if it's at all possible.
All right.
Maybe to give comfort to the committee, when we get to the point of making the decision to get new aircraft, there will be a thorough process led by the investment committee of the board that is going to look at all scenarios and then go for the one that is appropriate for the for SAA. And then we'll have to check that with the shareholder in terms of the country policy and also in terms of what the shareholder believes we can go with. But we'll definitely do a thorough job to make sure that we don't end up with something that destroys our balance sheet because we own so few of our aircrafts.
All right. Okay. You both want to make follow-ups? Okay. I'll allow both of you, and then we'll move on.
CEO, I hear you're paying the 3.1 billion, but maybe the next question that will arise, how long are you leasing this aircraft? 10 years, 5 years, and who are those people you are listening to?
Okay, Comrade Mente, then Comrade Boy. That would be the absolute last.
Now, Chairperson, now I would request that the report which the CEO says he will give us at a later stage, can he be able to finish us with that report latest Tuesday next week?
In terms of your report, good morning. This one. Can you go to page 180? Growing concern. Page 180 talks about the growing concern. But I want you to base your analysis today on what is here in front of us, which is called a growing concern. Now, it says you have a loan of about 8.9 billion. It says you've got liabilities of 17.8 billion. I can go on. Can you base your analysis on that, sir? You invent or do anything. How do you deal with this environment also? It seems as if you are already indebted. You are totally indebted. You own, you have got loans, you've got everything. How must we believe you that your turnaround strategy or whatever you're talking about today will be able to change the scenario that has been sketched out in front of us here? That you are owing, you are running on loans, your liabilities are way beyond yourself. What is it that they're telling us? Where is the truth? Because it's quite clear that you don't have the capital to run this entity.
Just to end on what Comrade Boy has said, and welcome and congratulations, and we wish you the best in your new job. SAA has a revenue of 30.7 billion. And we all know because we fly in every weekend as members of parliament, that SAA is always full. But you do not know. But on top of the 30.7 billion rand, you are always on bailouts,
and I don't want to repeat exactly what Comrade Boy is saying. So I wanted to suggest, maybe add up to what the Comrade Mente has said earlier on, that when you give us a report, you need to justify all this. That how come you're getting money? It shows that you are getting money, but you have a lot of material losses as well. And how do we turn the situation around? Are we ever going to have our own? I know you have answered already, but the problem of leasing aircraft is costing SAA more than it's worth. You know, the 30.7 billion that you are receiving, it's actually not helping at all because of those leasing and the maintenance of the aircraft. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, thank you very much. I think, Chair, the state of SAA's balance sheet is that of a very weak balance sheet. The SAA has a negative equity of 9.2 billion rand to date after we settled the last part of Citibank, I think. So that is not the position that any business could run with, where you've got negative equity, as we have today. When I talk about a weak balance sheet, that cannot support any asset acquisition if all those are financed, unless you buy cash. And I have not seen even the big airlines buying asset cash. So you use your balance sheet structure and your business plan to finance it, and you have the difference between leasing costs versus the financing cost, and you come to an answer that says your financial leverage is this answer. So we have a 9.2 billion rand that matures by March 2019. One of the key challenges when I got to the board, to the SAA in November, was that loans were maturing in November. The board with the executive had to negotiate with lenders to extend those loans, loan maturity dates. They mature in March 2019. And that is a real challenge, which is articulated on this going concern status that's being presented. We must acknowledge that the shelter did inject the 10 billion rand, which eased the going concern issue for the financial year under it. That we reported on. What SAA therefore needs, Deputy Chair, I must take a step back and say, any business has a maximum debt carrying capacity. The moment you overburden a business with debt, you get to a point where it cannot be able to carry its repayments, whether it's interest or principal amount. As things stand today, SAA is not able to pay the principal amounts. We are paying interest, which already indicates that the debt is burdensome. That's the one aspect. So to address going concern issues, this issue of the 9.2 and the ongoing funding of the turnaround plan is something that is critical. So to turn around, we have to fund the airline, but also look at the historic debt. So this is where the issue comes in terms of going concern. So there is debt that has accumulated over years, which today stands at 9.2. But obviously, there's working capital requirements because SAA is not able, the revenues of SAA are not able to cover all its costs, which means every month you've got a gap in terms of funding, in terms of your operations.
And at the end of the financial year, you have billions in losses.
Absolutely. If I address the issue of the root cause of the losses, there are a number of root causes, the causes of this. Our immediate analysis in November, we took all routes and analyzed them in SAA. The domestic routes, all of them without fail, were registering losses, not on a full cost allocation, but at a gross profit margin level, which means we are not talking the head office cost and other costs that you can say maybe you are overstaffed or you've got too many buildings and so on. Just the cost of the aircraft, you amortize it to the route, the fleet, the flight deck crew, the cabin crew, the fuel, landing and navigation rights, you said, well, let's look at this, then it's negative. So effectively, it means you either have a market problem or your direct expenditure cost is high. The second issue that's important in this equation is that we have to increase the utilization of aircraft significantly. We're doing global benchmarking so that we can actually get better efficiency. Now, when SAA doesn't make money domestically, even though the flights are full, our analysis is that SAA had become everything to everyone, starting from the
full service carrier customers to go and compete at the low cost market, which is the entry level of the travelers. When you do that, you're using an asset with different cost base. Effectively, you get to a point where, on average, you're making losses before you can even take your head office costs. That is why we've made the decision to rebalance our portfolio between Mango and SAA, because we said focus on market segmentation. Mango will do the low cost, and that's where the growth of the market comes in. And therefore, Mango is an efficient platform. Almost every flight they fly is profitable. SAA is not. Now, we've restructured the market domestically, but also we're taking a very hard look at which routes are a drain on SAA so that we can weather the storm, strengthening ourselves to grow again, because we will grow. So this is the root cause. It's how we address the market. It's also the efficiency within which we run the business. That's one of the key diagnostics. The offer I would want to make, Chair, there's a comment, is to walk the committee through, perhaps when the visit that you have proposed, walk the committee through the full view of the strategy, the turnaround strategy, so that the committee can give input and they perhaps challenge some of our thinking in this regard. But all these things are answered in the turnaround strategy that we have been working with on with Treasury.
Okay, no, that's fine. Comrade Vincent, okay, Comrade Vincent, small, all right?
I'm sorry, Chair, I was not aware that this item is going to be brought up. Can I refer SAA to page 97 of this document? I think it's your integrated report. The director's report. The third last paragraph. You say the directors have every reason to believe that the company has adequate resources. We're talking about the going concern. As directors, you're saying you have every reason to believe that this is a going concern. And that's why you will do everything on the basis of it being a going concern. And you cited as the chair and the CEO. But if I refer you to page 99 of the Auditor General's report, of your own report, 99, paragraph 12 or section 12, the Auditor General says something directly opposite to what you say. Directly opposite to what you say. The history of losses, lack of capital and volatility, along with maturing debt and working capital, indicate that a material uncertainty exists and may cast doubt on your going concern. That's what the AG said. And even in your own input just now, you were saying to us that, look, it is a concern. You need to do something. So I'm struggling to understand, Deputy Minister, how does a financial, a public report on page 99 says there's a serious problem, and then two pages earlier you say, well, look, we're going to continue this as if it's a going concern. We don't have a problem. That's the difficulty I'm having, Chair, because when I leave here, I need to know and say to South Africans, we've got a problem at SAA, because the AG says so. Or I go to the AG and I say, AG, go and reconsider, because when we met the department, they're saying that your findings are actually not based on fact. It's one of the two. It can't be both of them. So I'm asking you, because when we're done with you, we will ask the AG, of these two, which ones are correct, so that we as lawmakers can take a decision. And also say to you, Deputy Minister, that if indeed they're saying they have sufficient resources, why are you going to continue to bail them out until 2021? These are serious matters that we must discuss. You're going to be bailed out until 2021. You say you are going concerned with adequate resources. The AG says something differently. If they could just give us a briefing on that, Chair, then we can move forward. Thank you very much.
Brother, sir. Thanks, Chair. Our colleague across the way, they were just explaining that mango were profitable on every route, and you said that you were looking at restructuring the SAA route. When we did our oversight, we adopted the process of walking through the building without management. We just surprised departments. We told all of you to stay in your offices on the boardroom, and then we walked around unsupervised, which was very useful. And when we got to the sales department, one of the things they told us was is that when they advise you that a route is unprofitable, it can take up to 6 months to drop that route. Maybe that's why SAA, one of the reasons SAA is unprofitable, as opposed to Mango and others like Comair, for instance, is because it takes you, this massive ship, which you've lost control of, forever to actually just change course. So can you respond to why it is taking so long for your monolith to change simple course in terms of dropping a route? Why does it take 6 months to drop an unprofitable route? Why do we hemorrhage money for 6 months before we change those things?
All right, let me give honorable list. Please, comrades, I want us to move to, because like I said, I don't think we will be done with SAA purely from this engagement. I see it more as a preliminary probing to start isolating the issues so we become more focused next time.
Mr. Chairman, I do need your guidance on process, because I know I haven't been around for a year or two now, but I was kind of waiting for those key area focuses to be dealt with. But may I now ask some other questions? It seems to be what is happening now.
No. We, comrades, were making follow-ups on his area of focus. You are going to be the last, so that comrade Kuno can then move to another area of focus. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's as I remember it. Thank you very much. And my apologies for not so much of the old, but yes, a previous member, perhaps. the question of the going concern is certainly an issue. And one of the difficulties that I have with the report is that it's not time-bound. So the report was signed off on, I think, in the financial report was signed off on the 6th of December by the chair and the CEO. So one, and then the comments on going concern on page 50, kind of, I'm not sure what date those figures actually apply to. Do they apply back to March 2017, or do they apply as at the 6th of December 2017? That I find a little difficult, because, I mean, all these figures about how much it was owing and so on, and then it moves on to talk about 25th of October 2017, the minister and then the payments to the various banks of 2.2. So I think that this whole question of a going concern is fraught in the sense that it's not at a specific point in time. It's at some time after the financial year that there was a decision taken that now it's a going concern. And so I would assume that it's as at the date you signed off the financials, you made the going concern assumption as at that date, not as at the 31st of March 2017, whereas the Auditor General had long since finished his audit and done his report, and therefore his going concern comments might apply at a different point in time. So I really do think that Honourable Smith's point is a valid point. I don't really understand about this going concern. And then added to that is the report that you're going to present to SCO. And Mr. Chairman, I really do want to beg Parliament to somehow reduce the amount of time that we expect SAA executives to spend in front of us. I mean, I can't imagine how difficult it must be to try and turn this airline around when we keep calling them here. today they're here, tomorrow they're at SCOA, and a week or two they're before us at finance. And about 2 weeks ago they were before us as well. And we know there's a crisis. No one dealt with it. But I really would beg us to try and look at how we're dealing as a parliament with SAA and for coming. But let me move on with the going concern, Mr. Chair.
Are you not done with the going concern?
No, I'm not, Mr. Chair. So
I'm getting concerned.
The going concern. The concern, the going concern status. You see, this presentation for tomorrow at SCOA, bold at the bottom of slide 9, and it refers, it's referring to the so-called bailout, the 10 billion. And it goes through the where the money has gone and so on, and then it says, this position is already unsustainable. Now that's tomorrow, not 6th of December or the 31st of March last year. That's tomorrow you'll be saying to us that the position, cash flow position, is unsustainable and will become significantly worse without immediate intervention. Immediate intervention, Mr. Chairman. Not 12 months' time going concerned, immediate. So even though the 10 billion has been now paid because the last payment was due at the end of March, there's a cash crisis, if I read this correctly. So at the end, to get back to the going concern thing, I get even more confused because it's not 12 months since the 6th of December.
Okay.
And the going concern assumption relied on getting the 10 billion rand. The 10 billion rand, I have to assume, is now being paid because it had to be paid by the end of March.
All right, let's
the going concern status now.
That's fine. Let's allow them to explain that. I think Corporate Vincent adequately captured it in terms of what the age is saying and what they themselves are saying.
Chairman, if I may respond. Just insofar as the going concern matter is concerned, there are two matters. One is whether we have enough cash to see us through for a period of 12 months. The board and the AG had concluded on the 6th of December 2017, the AG on the 8th of December 2017, that we'll have sufficient cash to see us through for a 12-month period. And that addresses the commercial solvency question, whether we have enough cash to last 12 months. The second part of it is the factual insolvency. We have about 18 billion rand of net equity deficit, with the commitment from the shareholder that they would put in 10 billion rand would drop at a point in time the deficit to 8 billion, but then of course from March 17 we've been incurring losses, so that number would probably have grown by March 2018 to about 13 billion. And then we have the sovereign guarantee. We have a sovereign guarantee of about 17 or 18 billion rand. So the board and I believe the AG would have concluded that factually we've addressed the factual insolvency position, because we could rely on government guarantees to redeem some of the guaranteed debt. Chair, I just thought I'll address that matter and hopefully give some clarity on it.
All right. That's fine. Comrade Kulo, I know that we... Just a minute. Yes.
Chair, what we are dealing with history, and it's a history that predates us without outsourcing it. But what we've done since November, there is a close working relationship between National Treasury and Oversight Forum that is managing the, looking at making quick decisions on the issues that pertain to the turnaround strategy, which is chaired by the Deputy Finance Minister. We meet bi-weekly. So far we've been meeting weekly to look at the issues. So the ability to fast-track decision in that regard. So those are the instruments that are already in place now to fast-track decisions. But also, it may well be that the analysis done inside SA may not have been done in good time, which is what we're putting in place, quick analysis of business cases, working closely with the shareholder to make decisions. If you look at the speed at which we have executed, the market the market rebalancing in the domestic market has been record time for SAA, and with a board that is closely involved in terms of governance and oversight, with a shareholder that's very responsive. So we have created a new framework of doing things faster. Obviously, the history, it's very difficult to explain why things took too long. It's
all right.
In between.
No, that's fine. Well, we deal with history in this committee. That's what we deal with.
Sorry, Chair, I just wanted to point out to this board is you'll do yourself a massive favor if you get onto the ground and listen to your staff. When we did our oversight, we found that the staff were simply not being listened to. Don't sit in your ivory tower with your plans. Talk to your sales staff. Talk to your other staff. They've got some good ideas. Just on that, thanks.
Right, Comrade Kuno.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks for the opportunity. Let's start to where it all matters, the root causes of everything. And I'm glad that the Deputy Minister is here, and all your compliment, the Chairperson is here as well. The root causes is that there is no record keeping. That's what the AG has said in his report. What are you doing to deal with record keeping? If you don't have records, we'll sit here, we'll listen to you talking about big, you know, waves, but we'll never achieve what you want to achieve, record keeping. And maybe I do not expect an answer from you only, but to the internal auditors. Where are the internal auditors? Because my next question is coming to you. Can we go to record keeping?
What
are you doing?
In terms of
on everything, record keeping. Record keeping.
Yes. I'm addressing that, Chair. We have to put systems in SAA of making sure that there's record keeping, also there's history. Part of the findings that are there, for example, is the loss of institutional memory where things were kept in the manual format. So if you go far back, I must also say that the AG went multiple years back to go and find the source, the primary source of record. So for example, because they were the new auditors, they had to go and find the base platform, the foundation of the audit to satisfy themselves. So the moment you go multiple years back, you will find that the advert that was put out there in the initial procurement of a particular item is not in the system. And those are some of the things that we're finding which creates
problems. No, but the question is why the poor record keeping?
SAA has had the management instability and has been acting people throughout SAA, and that's what we find when we get to SAA in November last year. So the people left with documents, there was no system of control. These are the things that we're putting in place. Maybe Kenneth, you want to add?
Through you, Chairperson. The SAA environment is very manual driven. So there's an over-reliance on paper coming to the offices throughout the procure pay cycle, contract cycle. Look, there's a problem with the historical records. We're trying to actually start rebuilding.
Well, the question is, you rely on paper. Why are those papers not kept? And I thought you had responded. Continue, Comrade. I think he has responded. There have been instability, people living with documents. That's it. No, I wanted to move on to the next question because
the
information does not assist us.
What's not going to assist any one of us is when we start to be defensive in our approach. SAA has a problem, and we can all acknowledge that. And I think if we work together, I listened to what my colleague here was saying, that we're calling you more in Parliament than you are supposed to be doing your job. Unfortunately, in SCOPA, we do things differently. We want to see results. We are results driven. And if you come here and become defensive, it's not going to help us at all. If we do not have documents, we do not have documents. And how long have you been employed as the internal auditor?
I've been at SAE for just over 6 years now.
6 years. The AG says that one of the reasons why you did, they didn't have your outcome, audit outcome on time, is because you failed from SAE to be audited. You failed, you were late. What was the problem?
I think that should be answered by the CEO, not internal audit, because that's a management function, isn't it? Yeah.
But Chairperson, if you look at it, sorry to interrupt you. Again, they have to feed the information for that information to go to the management. And the fact that he has just come in, you know, thumbsucking information won't help us at all as well, Chairperson. We need to get to the real, the facts. And the people who have been there, they would know the facts. That's why I'm asking the internal auditors, because without you feeding that information into the system, then that information won't be in the system at all. That's why I'm asking you.
I think the issues that have been raised by AG as internal auditor, most of them we also did surface them. But now, when coming to actually now implementing and taking action to fix the issues, that's where then as internal audit we need to step back, because we also have that independence that we have to guard against. So as much as the issues we've surfaced them, we do have that, I don't know whether I can call it a challenge, where we cannot become part of management and fix them. The best I can do is to keep on reminding them, whether monthly or every second month, to say, this is the issue, please fix it before this and this and this happened. That we do as internal audit.
Chair, I must add and say, when I got to SAA, then this audit was on flight. And one of the things we have noticed in the finance area was capacity constraints, especially around dealing with some of the legacy matters that has to do with access to information, making sure we can provide the right information in the format that the OIG wanted the information, keeping in mind that it was AG's first audit of SAA, and they had to rely a lot onto historical record to find the platform to audit justifiably so. So what the CFO at that time did indicate to me that they have constraints in terms of capacity to actually go back into the archives and pull the information, especially given that a lot of is in the manual form. The answer is around capacity and also putting systems of control, which we are dealing with today.
Thank you. Thanks, Chairperson. I know that my focus area is on procurement and contracts and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And I thought, Chairperson, I wouldn't go straight to that if I do not talk about the issues that I've started with. You have a staff complement of 10,071. And the AG is saying, of all those 10,000 staff, whether you are short-staffed or what, it's not an issue. The issue is that there is no competence. I think my colleague earlier on asked you on for some reports. And I think the report that will help us is to have a skills report, skills audit report. Well, if we're saying and we are committed to try and turn SAA around and actually not talk about these things without, you know, following up on them and making sure that they do happen. If we do not take the necessary skills, you know, match the skills around, we're going to be, you know, working round in circles, talking about the same thing over and over and over again. So I'm not sure if you have anything to say about that.
Chair, it is correct that part of the challenge, and we've articulated this, that part of the challenge of SAA is certain parts, levels of the organization where there's especially at the executive level in certain parts, whether it's in commercial, we do have a challenge of capacity and capability in terms of the skill. That's part of the challenge with the turnaround of the organization. What we are doing around this, as we have been clear that part of the strategy is to build a fit for the future commercial focus airline. And we have developed an operating model, the kind of how will SAA that is like other successful airlines look like in terms of the structure and competence. The board has approved that. We are going to go through the organizational design process, which will help to look at all of us in terms of being fit for the future. And that's part of where we're going to pick the skills gap and be able to place the people in the right position based on skills.
That's fine. Hoping that you're going to last the full term of your contract. If you leave, come down to zero. So I hear you. Yes, complete.
Promising that we are really watching you. All of you, we are watching you. Let's go to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And the AG says that they were internal auditor. You do not have systems that could have prevented this fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we're talking about the amounts up to 40 million, 2016, 17, you know, a lot of amounts that have escalated throughout the years that we're talking about as far as fruitless and wasteful expenditure is concerned. So it means if you had systems in place with the airline that is really finding it hard to find its feet, this luxury of having fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I mean, we're talking about a lot of money, 125 million. We're talking about for 16-17 financial year, 5.4 2015-16, 68.5 million 2014-15 financial year. What systems do you have in place to make sure that you prevent this?
As far as the systems are concerned, I agree with the AG findings. They are factually correct. Currently, the systems we have are not adequate at all. I think the documentation first, as AG has indicated in their reports, it's not there. Our supply chain management policies, sometimes it does have gaps where you find that maybe when we procure, we are not able to timely identify the areas where we can incur fruitless and wasteful expenditure. As the CEO has already indicated, we know about the gaps. They are being prioritized. We have appointed people to try and assist us as far as closing those gaps. As I indicated, our weaknesses are both at the systems level, the IT systems, and also at the policy levels. So
Just hang on a minute. Expired contracts or no contracts? This is when we were there, we found that your legal department was manned by one or two people, and yet all the contracts have been processed by those people. That's why you were contracting people through this letter of award or something like that. So we're not yet there at the systems and policies, and that you did not have the capacity to timely process. By the time the AG come to audit a contract that was 1 year, 6 months, it has expired and the contract has not been processed.
Chair, let me address as a starting point the fruitless and wasteful expenditure.
but also start with contact management. Contact management in terms of resources in the legal department, but also just the systems. Because if you register the contract into a system that flags the start and end dates, it helps, it enables the contract management aspect. You are able to get an early trigger when that contract will expire. So we have a double challenge of both people and systems. Today, we have managed to get an interim head of legal because SA has had acting people. So these things get done when there are leaders who are committed to make things work. Now, she started first of April. We're doing all reviews of contract, working with Kenneth Bilay, who started in April as well. Between procurement and legal, we're putting leaders who are going to put the right framework, but we need to put systems in place so that the people who are the acquiring people can put in the system to flag what needs to be done. One of the challenges we have today at SAA is that because last year the board had decided to say contracts will not be extended or SA will not enter into contracts longer than 6 months. Now we have that the 6 months contract can be burdensome in terms of concluding them consistently over a 6 months period. The board has taken a different decision moving forward. So we have a backlog that we need to work on of 6 months contract, which in turn does create problems from a pure audit point of view. So we have to work, so there's more work as a result of where SAA was last year. So, Chair, capacity, systems, and leadership is a challenge. Yeah.
Move to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It's a pity the two people I want to address are confessing. Well, the CEO, Comrade Deputy Minister, and the Chairperson of the Board. The responses that we're getting, it's almost like we're building an entity from anew. And all of those are products of lack of continuity, which the board must take responsibility for and the ministry must take responsibility. We might be talking all nice things here, and then 3 months down the line we hear that he has been suspended. And then you have Maluleke acting. And then so we keep on starting all the time. But it's fine. Talk to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure.
And I will ask my colleagues to back me here. There are largely three drivers of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. One relates to still visa fines in terms of the big contribution. The visa fines, then we are in the schedule that we shared. We are clawing back from the companies that are servicing us in the visa administration. So visa fines are a big component. The second component in this area is the claims in Brazil, where in Brazil there is a specific challenge around claims where if the customer perhaps an in-flight entertainment system didn't work, they can claim even the emotional upheaval that you suffered by not watching this thing, more than just a standard claim. So these are specific laws that we're battling with in Brazil. We're putting on high alert because in court, often you lose against the customer claim in Brazil more often than any other country. So we're working, therefore, with IATA to make sure that there's an alignment of what those claims would look like. So you'll see there's a spike in the Brazil scenario. And the last part also is around late payments. Some of the suppliers begin to want to charge interest because at that point in time we would not have been able to pay them within the required time, which reflects the financial situation at SA at the time. So, and obviously there are things that the other journalists raise around the planning of the return of aircraft. In the year, the 2016, the year we are closing, part of the decisions that happened was that because of the 6 months contract, the board could not extend narrow body aircraft to stay longer at SAA, so there was an unplanned exit of those aircraft. So that does come in as an issue that you pick up as an audit issue in this regard. But a lot of these issues are as a result of the circumstance of SAA, one in terms of skill and capability, but most importantly, the kind of
difficult financial context in which we operated, including interest payments, the Brazil issue, visa fines, and the exit, unexpected exit of narrow-body aircraft. And when we audit them, it comes as unplanned work on aircraft.
Okay.
There's also 46 million on management accounts. That's a problem as well. But Chairperson, when we talk about fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I also wanted to go on to duplicate payments. We need to have that report. Who have you doubled payment or duplicated payments to, and how are you SSAA trying to get that money? How far are you with the process? We need names of those companies and the people who are in the procurement supply chain who are dealing with that. What has happened to them? And Chairperson, maybe before he answers, we had a problem before when we went to SAA of some of the employees that didn't want to be vetted, which I think it's the problem. If you don't know who are you or who you are dealing with in the first place, trying to get into, you know, making them committed to what they are supposed to be doing, it's going to be a fruitless, waste of time, because nobody's going to take you seriously because they're not committed. You don't even know who they are, but you have employed them. So maybe coupled to your response, if you could tell me about that as well, if you could just, because it was one of our concerns.
Chair, if I may come in on the overpayments. The first issue, I think maybe I'll want to separate the two on them, in that there's one where there's clear possible overpayments. There was an error by staff members who have actually declared and recovered the monies. So they managed to invoice the companies to get the monies. The second part, which was raised by the AG, was possible overpayments, which was with regard to the contract lifecycle management system, which is currently not fully functional. Currently, we're working with IT. They are trying to get a new system, I think it's called Ariba, that will assist us in terms of contract loading to manage the payment. Because currently what's happening is that what the AG did is they actually went to the finance guys, took a list of payments, and then they wanted to see the contracts linking to the payments. But what you find out is that on one supplier, there could be different purchase orders. And the contract lifecycle management system doesn't provide you that, the detail. So this is what the Ariba system will assist us in terms of getting to mitigate the issue of possible overpayment. All right.
Chairperson, that money was not your money or anybody's money. It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the SAA, which is thinking them. And we do not want to, what you are saying is that it's contrary to what the AG has said. They are there, they've been in your offices for 11 months now. So they know what they're talking about. And the system that you're talking about is something that you're thinking of right now. I don't think it's there at all. But you want to, we want names of those supply chain, or whoever. Are they called managers or like a supervisor? But supply chain. We want to know the names and those contracts that they've duplicated. But also, CEO, I want to tell you what you are inheriting. There's evergreen projects, contracts, that don't come straight because of the 6 months that you're talking about. What they will do, they collapse the system so that maybe 5 months just before the contract expires, you will be forced to sign and make sure that whatever is happening goes on. That's why they can take you to court for interest, because they know that you'll always, forever, give them extra contract. That's the problem that you are inheriting. And if we do not get into the bottom of that, the transformation that you are speaking about in your annual report, It will never happen because we'll forever have the same people coming on board in different names or in different ways and actually suppressing other incomers to come on board.
Chairperson, just to quickly tell you, there's a manual process put in on the procurement side and on the payment side to control any transaction that's actually going through the system.
Like during this manual process?
So we've got about 20 on the supply chain side and about 10 on the finance side. We've put in controls in place where before any payment is actually processed on our financial system, all checks and balances will be done. Whether there's a contract in place, what values have we paid that contractor to eliminate the duplication of payment. But ma'am, I mean, honourable member, we will submit a duplicate payment report through the chairperson. With regards to the evergreen contracts, I fully agree with you. Contracts have come in from early 2000s and continued and continued. We're taking entire stock of every contract that is held by the SAA group, so that's the corporate as well as the subsidiaries across the board, so we can find out exactly when did contracts start and what is the necessity. There is a report here. Some of it is out of necessity. Airports across the world use certain providers of services for ground handling, etc. But some evergreen contracts don't make sense to us at all, and we're busy investigating those.
Yeah, my colleagues will deal with that. There is no testing of contract management. That's why you are, instead of profiting, you are losing every day. And I know that you are speaking about the study, about aviation all over and how are they making profits, and you are losing out. It's because nobody tests this thing. You know, that is why it's only in South Africa where you find open skies like we're doing. How does British Airways and all those aircraft or airlines profit in our own country and we are not profiting? Is it because, and why do you, instead of going to, I mean, we have, can I keep remembering about this? We have PIC that can actually give you an interest, a lower interest, in terms of loaning. Why do you have to go to banks and, you know, pay so much interest in banks when you can do it easier and cheaper? Please, we must stop sleeping. Can we just all wake up and say, this is our country. We're going to guard what we have with everything that we have and make sure that SAA does not become, just say, you know, it is when I'm here. Chairperson said maybe after 6 months we'll be gone. And say, well, no, for my 6 months when I was there, something has happened.
Well, why don't we, Comrade, let the Deputy Minister note that issue of the open sky policy? Because I think it is national treasure. I think it was Pravin Gordhan who was the minister at that point, which, as you correctly point out, SAA does not have those rights in other countries, but other airlines in South Africa, they can just go anywhere and everywhere. And yet we have an airline that is bleeding, that needs money. So we're just shooting ourselves in the foot. So I think, Comrade Deputy Minister, maybe just note that question and we can maybe talk to it actually when he responds, because that's also a critical question.
And they didn't answer the vetting part, Chairperson. But also when the Deputy Minister comes later, we need to see the management account. When, at least, because coming to us is going to be a mission. And check, you know, it's always, when we're doing accounting 101 at Varsity, you'll be told about the, you know, the income. What is that thing? Where you are actually recording everything that comes per day, all the rules that you have in, and how does that come into the revenue of SAA? Because it's one of the problems that you are inheriting. You'll find that it takes forever before it comes to SAA. That's why you are instead of gaining, you are losing out. Can you answer the vetting part?
Yes, Chair. On the vetting part, we have a portfolio of employees who have been vetted. What we have to reconcile is whether everyone has been vetted. There's a portfolio that HRS has
come. Wait. We know not everyone has been vetted. Don't tell us about those who are vetted. We know that. The issue is those who were not vetted, including your predecessor, the fellow who was the acting CEO, the entire acting CEO of SAA. It refused to be vetted. So, it's as I say, nothing has been done. Since you came in, nothing has been done. And then we proceed. Because we know that there were officials and workers or employees who refused to be vetted.
Chair, we haven't acted further on it. We'll take action and move forward on it. I just got the report of the vetting. I need to reconcile and act on the others who have not been vetted.
All right.
They have
1,237
HFs. And I know that there's contract as well for food. I'll just make it blunt. There's a contract for that. How do you differentiate the HF and the contracts that you are giving people to come and give you food in the aircraft? What is the difference?
Chair, HF is a 100% owned subsidiary of SAA. SAA contracts with HF to provide all the onboard food services except for Mango. So let's talk about SAA Master Brand. What HF does then HF does the sourcing of the different components on their own, but from an SA point of view, we're looking at a plate bear passenger on board. So the whole coordination of the logistics and supply chain, preparation of food, everything is done by HF with a sourcing capability, whether they source from farmers or from producers of different components of what we prescribe as a menu. So HF is our outsourced partner. They prepare the food and then they do the sourcing in the back end for themselves on their own.
That's the evergreen project that we're talking about. Airships, are you saying Airships is like an entity?
Airships is a company that we own 100%. We own it as SAA 100%. It's part of the SAA group. So SAA is 100% shareholder of Airships. Yes, it's ours. It's part of government.
Kintuano?
Yes.
Okay. Chairperson, you know my problem is when you come to SCM, maybe when you go to SAA, back to SAA, to go and do an oversight, we should really spend a day on supply chain management. Because, you know, the mistake that they are making and the mockery that they are making to the transformation, it's when you find that the people who are actually at the moving end are the ones who are at fault. For instance, if you look at all these companies that are listed and three written quotations not obtained, your Gijima, Bundu, I won't say all of them, but I'm just talking the Muloi Trading. It's your African people, that's when you talk about transformation. Why do we make mistakes when it comes to transformation? And when it comes to big businesses, there are no mistakes. Because they want these people at the end of the day, either they're going to blacklist them or they're not going to give them contracts at all in the future because something happened, you know, and the one, because they are at the right end of the corner, they were given contract. There's nothing wrong with what they did. But the person in SCM, why can't we take pride in who we are and what we want to achieve as a country? It's after 23 years and we're still not transformed as SAA. Yes, I can. We talk about the loss, but the transformation is also a problem. And that's what we are also taking. I hope that you will take this thing seriously and make sure that we turn around. And we do not want to see these companies being killed even before they can raise their heads and actually try to come into the market. This is the way of making sure that they don't come to the market at all.
All right.
Thanks.
I would like you to round up. I know there are still many questions that can be asked. I want to, instead of allowing comrades to make follow-ups, I would rather we allow Comrade Kekane to do his bit, and then we can all ask on the two focus areas.
The theft or the procurement, which is part of the theft of parts, the parts theft, is it the technical?
No, they spoke to it earlier. They're
okay.
Talking about the system and reconciliation.
But that system, Chairperson, if you remember when we were there, the person who was operating that system didn't even understand how to operate that system. And we were told after some time that actually they can get everything that they want to get. It's just that nobody's interested to look into the system. That's why it's easy for them to steal whatever part. So changing from methods to Amos, and next time you'll be changing to Intelisafe. It's not going to help if you do not have people who really are committed to make sure that things do turn around. Thanks, Chair. That was my last question. I'll come
yeah.
later when we
okay. All right. Can you respond, Commissioner?
Chair,
get yourself ready.
What we have done is, part of it is to bring skills at SAA. Kenneth is not even finished a month, and we have a work program that we have given him to review supply chain management policy, so focus specifically on SATs. We were there last week in terms of looking at the whole logistic portfolio. We were there Thursday on a full-day workshop. So we're bringing skills to come in and assist to help with both the business process transformation as well as doing the transformation in supply chain right. Transformation without sacrifice. So we bring a skill, Chair. If unless we bring the skill with good intentions, no system every system can be circumvented. So we're working on a combination of the two, and that's why we are recruiting fast and trying to get people to come in and help us.
Okay.
Policies. Maybe the Deputy Minister, when he comes in later, he will give us I was just thinking out loud. We need to know the policies, because that's one of the problems the challenges that the AG has identified, that we do not have policies. So policies in all your main structures, we need to see those policies. And actually, as we're writing those policies, check if they're implementable, and if there's anybody who's looking behind that and checking the implementation of those policies.
All right.
So that when you bring them to us, you already know that you've made left the homework as far as the policies are concerned.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Comrade Kekane, except that with transformation, you must go and check your enterprise development section was understaffed. The employees complained that they are understaffed and therefore cannot affect enterprise development. Yes, comment, Kekane.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, let me start off by saying I'm disappointed by the responses that we seem to be getting, because I think we are talking past each other. Let me just indicate one simple thing. When we met with SAA, we requested them to investigate certain issues and come back to us, that is, with a response. Unfortunately, the documents before me here, they are not, I mean, giving me, that is, the information that we've requested. Let me just demonstrate what I'm saying with this spreadsheet. Just pick one issue here. For instance, on the Arrivian call, if you look at the comment at the end, the comment is the matter is being reviewed. Now, I really don't understand, because all what we requested from them is to investigate this contract and give us the reasons why this contract was illegally, that is our debt. We did not say to you, tell us what you are going to do, that is going forward. That is a serious problem that I think we need to correct. Because we took the trouble of having a hearing here, and we went to, that is SAA, and we raised these issues. We gave you a specific task, and we requested you to come back to us on those issues. But unfortunately, you did not. The other issue is, on the issues that we raised, I'm happy that on the report that we have received, is that you decided to appoint 5 companies to investigate those issues for an amount of plus minus 28 million. And I think there's value for money. That is for that. But let's look at what happened, that is on that. You appointed these companies to investigate these issues, and the next thing, you don't provide them with information. Do you mind maybe to explain to us as to why didn't you provide them with information?
We're seeking clarity on the company so that we are able to respond. We missed the part about which companies are we, that we can, so that we can respond. We missed the question on the companies, Chair. That's what we're asking for clarity, Chair, so that I know, so that we can respond. Sorry.
I'm saying you appointed 5 companies to investigate certain issues. And more or less you had 116 files that they requested. You did not provide them with that information. My question is, why didn't you do that? Because obviously for them to perform, that is their responsibilities, they rely more, that is, on the information that you provide.
One of the instances I know where information was not available, now I'm going to speak from an auditor side. The report was, of course, done by myself. It was ENF investigation. A lot of information was not provided to ENS. And the reason given to us was that those files could not be located. I think it goes back to the reasoning that the CEO gave earlier, that the people who ran with those procurement files, some of them already left. They might have left with the documentation, or they filed it in areas that they were not sure about. But it was still the same challenge that was faced by the AG. It was also faced by the investigators who were BNS. Files were just not there. The reason, from an audit side, from an audit point of view, we were just put to it. It was not there. It also happened, I think, with the Ernst & Young investigation.
Okay.
Yeah, Now, your internal audit chair is around here.
Oh, yeah, I'm the one.
Did you scrutinize that report?
Yes, I did, yeah.
And what is your impression of the report?
There were many areas where I was not happy about, especially when coming to evidence that they were supposed to give to me. So there are findings in the report where when I asked about who did they interview, which information did they inspect, where I did not get happiness on. But all my concerns on the report were communicated to the investigators. But looking at the report, just the principles, I agreed with them. If you look at just the findings on procurement, things to do with the contracts extensions, areas where there are no contracts and all of it. So with the principles, I was quite happy. But as far as the audit evidence being provided to me on supporting some of the things that were in the report, there were indeed areas where I was a bit concerned, and those were highlighted to the investigators.
Now what did you do with that concern?
Pardon?
What happened to your concern? Because we cannot just say you had concerns and it ends there. Because if you look at what you commissioned, it is very serious. In that, when we came in there, we discovered that there are serious anomalies. And hence we suggested to you as a team that please investigate this and come back to us. But to come back to us and say, no, you are not happy about what happened in terms of the investigation, and it ends there. Did you report this, that is to management and the board? That's precisely what I want you, that is to understand.
If maybe I had to speak about the one of these, let me start first with open water report. That one I was very happy about. The findings that are there, they were very serious. I think the findings were on components, tenders, tires, tenders, and all of it. So those findings are being acted upon as we speak now. There are people who've been issued with the letters where we're indicating intention to suspend. So that one we've implemented open water. I did not have any concerns at all. When coming to the actual process issues, because it's not only just about misconduct, we also need to fix the processes. Already, there are actions on the ground that we are implementing to address the process weaknesses, control weaknesses. So I was happy there. Coming to Ernst & Young report, there also I was happy. It was mostly again around the contracts management issues that we are addressing now, policy weakness issues and other controls issues. The ENS one, if you look at it, I think it's divided into three main categories. The first one is the potential revenue losses. They did not identify any actual revenue losses. And we've indicated, I think, in one of the submissions where as to what exactly are we doing to address all the potential revenue losses. For example, they will say that maybe there is revenue of approximately 3% of our total turnover that we might be losing. So it's the estimates. It's not maybe kind of like saying that this is the actual money that you've lost because of this and this and this. So we are putting systems in place to address those issues. So the concern will be to say, how did you come to this estimate? So that's where the concerns were. But then as the business, we did not dismiss those findings. We said, okay, because we are happy with the principles, let us implement the recommendations that they said that we must implement.
Right. Okay. Let's maybe run through the contracts that I'm referring to, because we are giving you generic answers. Let's start with the first one of EJMO consulting. One of my colleagues raised an issue on the HF's neck tender. The bidder raised complaints about the procurement process, which he alleged were not fair, transparent, and cost-effective. Misconduct from the side of SAA employee who were involved in the tendering process. What happened to that employee?
there were many investigations that were conducted around the Ashes tender. The injury report recommendations were implemented because what was found was that the people who ran with the procurement process actually did not have the skills in documenting actually what was actually being required from the potential bidders. That employee, I think, left Ashes some time back. Because when that report came out, the CEO approached the employee and asked about all the gaps, that how did those things happen. I'm not sure about what exactly were his reasons for resignation, but he resigned around that time. A whole lot of number also in the procurement section of Ashes have actually resigned. Others have been retrained. Those who have found to have done wrong, not only in this specific tender process, but in others, have actually been put through a disciplinary process. Others have been let go, and others have resigned on their own. As we speak now, I think Ashes has almost a completely new team of procurement specialists. The people who were there at that time are actually gone.
All right. Okay.
My follow-up question is, would you have had a problem in providing us with that information? Because that's exactly what we requested you to do. And that report is not here. All what is here is just that this happened. As to what did you do as management in remedying the situation, it's not in the report. Because what we requested you was very simple, exactly what you are telling us now. We said, please investigate all these issues and give us a report. But up to today, we don't have a report. My question is, was it going to be very difficult for you, that is, to follow a simple instruction, then investigate and report back?
We will have to look at. I did prepare a report with each investigation conducted and the outcome and the action that was taken. One will have to maybe go back to that report. I think we did submit it to the committee. Go back to that report maybe and see the areas where we can improve it. So I did try to summarize each investigation. I think the report has about 11 investigations that are there. We did indicate there is actually a column where I indicated what exactly happened per each area. I think one maybe might apologize if this information was not accurate. I commit that I can go back and check whether we where I need to improve on our report.
All right.
You see, the difficulty is, for instance, on the South Polo office, we raised the issue, and we all agreed that we don't need that office. We all agreed that also you need to come back to us. Still, there's nothing here. Now, I really don't understand as to, even my line of questions, to be honest, the report or the answer that I'll be getting from you, I do have a report. And when we met you, those were the answers that we received. We do have a report. We'll provide the report. But I don't have anything. And it made me, I don't know, it made my preparations very difficult. Because I wanted to go through, that is, the response that you provided, so that we can look at whether you have done what we requested you to do and what was the progress after us meeting you. Hence, in my opening statement, I said, I'm highly disappointed about the responses that we are getting. And the chairperson was correct to say, it is as if we are meeting you for the first time. And yet, this is a follow-up that is to a hearing. Chair, I don't know, but maybe, because I'm becoming frustrated about the answers that I'm getting. Because these are the investigations where one was supposed to get feedback. And unfortunately, there's no feedback. Now, maybe you'll have to give direction as to how should I deal with this issue.
No, if you don't mind, I hear you, Comrade. If you don't mind, I want to check the other comrades, their specific issues they want to raise. Because in the back of my mind, I don't think this is the last engagement. Because because clearly we have not gone to all the corners. Some of these issues, they may need to form part of our future engagement. Specifically, I'm looking at investigations. Also, if you look at the briefing notes of the AG, there's also a list of investigations. Some are 18 months old, some are 14 months, 6 months, that, which will still also be subject to engagement. I just want to check with you if you're fine with that. I can give to other comrades. If not, I'm allowing you to proceed. But I'm just saying, in the instance of what you're saying, say maybe let's leave that. We'll deal with it as part of the ongoing process of engagement. But we'll bow in on that, B.
No, thanks, Chair. Actually, I thought you would assist me because I said I'm frustrated. I'm going through this thing and I'm not getting that is any response. But then I would accept your proposal if you are saying it should be part and parcel of our ongoing, that is, engagement. Because to be honest, I would be wasting your time if I proceed. That there's nothing, absolutely nothing that is in front of me that would convince me that there's progress at SAA. I was excited one day when I saw the deputy minister and a team that is on television that is in Dosiachiga. I thought that maybe Zizauchiga, even in this meeting, Abuji in next. Maybe Zizauchiga going forward.
I told him that now. Okay. I'll give you. I just want to. I'll give you. I want to start with Lemwa. No, I want to point my comrades, and then I'll come back to you so that I can hear you. I'll start with Lemwa, and then Brother Seth, Comrade Boy, Comrade Vincent. Mente. Mazamba, I'm cleaning out. I want you to ask a question and not talk. Then Comrade Mente and then Ross. Yes, no, all of you. I was just pointing on the order. But all of you, including yourself, also one of the asking. But let me hear the chair of the board.
Chairman, thank you very much. Inasmuch that I hear a serious level of frustration and consternation, I must also express that we do have a serious level of consternation and frustration. I try hard to look for solutions, Chairman, members of the committee. I'm tempted to suggest, Chairman, because it looks like there is a formatting problem here. There is an expectation from the Standing Committee Chairman, which is known to the Standing Committee, but I doubt if it is clearly known from us who are supposed to respond to this. We prepare reports. I, as a board member, read these reports. I get a serious level of comfort. Where I have discomfort, I express the discomfort. But it looks like here, and I need to be corrected if I'm wrong, that the committee requires a granular, individual, process, conclusion type report, which would be like a book this size. or the committee requires something, maybe for both of us not to be frustrated and consternate a very serious level of consternation, we need to agree a format that will be satisfactory to the committee and that will also allow the executives to do their work properly. Otherwise, we can continue pointing fingers at one another and that frustration. When you are frustrated, I get frustrated because I'm supposed to serve you. Now, if I don't serve you, but I don't know how to serve you, maybe because we are new, we really need to be given exactly how you want your reports, particularly on these investigations, to be done, Chairman. Otherwise, we'll keep on frustrating ourselves and achieve very little.
Okay. All right. No, that's fine. We indeed do want granular. When we started with correctional service a few years back, they literally sent us boxes. So if you say it will form a book, it's nothing. And we went through each and every document with a fine comb. We read the site. We read. And we want information. We don't want generalities. We want specifics. Because it's only in dealing with specifics that we're able to get to solutions. And I take your point. I hear your point. And that's a problem, Comrade Deputy Minister. You see, SAA came here last year. We went to their head offices. We spent the whole day from 9 until, I think we left at around 6.
No, 2 days.
2 days, yeah, 2 days. So now we're new faces. So it's back to square one. And, you know, so I hear your point, I get your point. But it is important that it must be said so that you also, it's a different committee here. We want details and we read. That I can assure you, we read and we want information. So I think let's leave it at that. Comrades, I'll request that can we just go 1-2 so that everyone can have an opportunity. It's almost 12:30. Klengwa?
1-2-3. No, Chair, I will comply. I have got a long list of things I wanted to raise, but let me confine myself to two. Just one of the things is perceptions. They go a very long way in terms of whether an institution or an entity is making progress or not. And so maybe at the outset, Chair, I'll deviate from probably the narrative or script which has been outlined or emerges out of the Auditor General and ask the CEO to explain, confirm, deny the existence of a contract for security to the value of 35 million rands to a company, Control Risk, where the allegation is that senior personnel within SAA will receive protection to the tune of 35 million rand, and that this contract is effective the 1st of March, but most importantly is that procurement processes were not followed. If he's responded to this before, that's fine, but I think that this platform provides him an opportunity to take us into his confidence, into the extent of whether that is true or not, because I found it to be quite worrisome to read something of this nature. So I'll start there, Chair, and I'll come back with my second word.
Chair, as early as December last year,
some of the executives started receiving threats as we started executing the work of the change and being given the opportunity to execute on the forensic reports. Those were reported according to the police. And at that time, I approached the board and I said, here is the issue of risk. And taking into account the state of SA at that time around the levels of trust, both in terms of intent and competence, I felt that this is an issue that would have to be dealt with the board. And more so that it was also affecting me personally. So it was not something I was prepared to preside over as myself as a person. Because if I give to a junior employee, then they would have to look at providing services to the CEO, which would not be appropriate. Then the board invoked a process within the provisions of the board charter to look at the sourcing of security services to make sure that the executives, some of them who are coming from international, could also be protected during the time of change. I must underscore that media reports, they talk about this being in lieu of restructuring. That is not the case. It's specifically to do with the kind of changes we're making around forensics. It has nothing to do with employee layoffs, work with unions. I have labor forums that I run with them consistently. So the procurement processes were followed. What is reported as a headline figure? It's the build-up of what the possibility will be. I am slightly uncomfortable, Chair, to outline the build-up of what people saw as a figure, those people internally. Because if I do that, I will be outlining the detail of the security plan. Happy to share that in a closed session to present this. But the numbers that are quoted there are hypothetical numbers. Those are not the numbers that are definite numbers that had to happen. But at the level of detail, we can share with the committee without, hopefully, without compromising security.
All right. Yes, second question.
Thanks, Chair. I'm certainly not looking for the detail of the content. My issue is the figure. Because this is a cost to the taxpayer, and quite frankly, Chair, I'm not for one moment suggesting that the identified risk must be allowed to come to fruition. That would be regrettable. But we must at the same time be sensitive to the realities that we are dealing with SA, which is a struggling entity. And Deputy Minister, in fact, if there is a way in which these costs can be mitigated and other interventions of the state as opposed to SA putting this bill, because what I'm gathering is that this 35 million could be more. If you're not, and I'm not suggesting for one second, Chair, that let's not get into the details. But if it cannot be confirmed here, I would deal with the situation is 35 million today and could be 40 million tomorrow and so on. And so, Chair, all I'm saying is that let us look for a solution which is financially sound and financially reasonable in the face of crisis. Because, like I say, perceptions go a long way. If we're going to be splurging on security, it does not in any way provide, you know, any comfort at the very least to me. But at the same time, I'm quite sensitive to the fact that life is at risk. Chair, secondly, as you said, two bites. Arising out of our...
We want to have a committee here to allow the CEO to have this
on a point of order, Chair. Chairman, we have come to account here. This is not your meeting. Can you cool down? I hear your other comment. I was going to come to that accountability doesn't ask us to sit down and prescribe to you how to account. We have come to account here. Accept it. You're not co-chairing. You're not doing anything. There's only one chairperson. And we're members of parliament. You rather accept that or you don't accept it. We're members of parliament. You're coming to account to us here. And right. Be patient. Don't want us to lose. We've been trying to be patient with you. Now it's quite clear that you're overstepping your mandate. our chairperson is listening, you'll be interfering. Can you just cool down?
All right.
No, Chair,
Let Lembo ask his question. If there's anything that you want to tie down to his last comment, you can do that after he has asked his question.
Chair, when we were at SAD, and I think Honorable Rogers had pointed this out, we interacted with the staff quite extensively. And I think one of the confirmations of that interaction has arisen today, that SAE is a very paper-heavy institution. And then there was, linked to that, was the issue of the technological innovations, in particular to the app and so on, and how you can use it to facilitate your travel. Now, we are competing in a global environment which is very fast-paced. I want to ask the extent to which SAE is taking into account the seriousness of technological innovations. And I'll tell you why, Chair. The SAE app is a very difficult one to navigate. It's very complicated. But put that aside. If I forget my PIN, the expectation that I must send an email with my ID, I must fax it to whatever, whereas your competitors in the market, that can be changed in 5 minutes with a link to my own email, and I'll update my logins and so on, and then proceed with using the applications. Now, I fail to understand if the most basic of technological innovations is compounded by paper. You have to go through a call center, you must fax or email your ID, and then the PIN will be reset by someone and then sent to you. If that were to happen and I'm traveling abroad, where do I get the time and luxury to do those kind of things? I illustrate this particular point to your tech guys express the biggest of frustrations that what is at the heart of the new age is not taken seriously. They are short-staffed, under-budgeted, and they're expected to deliver on a global competitive basis. And it's confirmed now, you paper heavy. You even want copies of ID. So if I forget it 4 times in a week, I must email and fax 4 times in a week. So I want to zoom into that particular space here because it's a cost driver and would go a long way in reducing your cost. You're generating 30 billion rand a year, but quite frankly, your expenditure is shooting through the roof. Let me just say, I think the point I wanted to make insofar as security is made was, now when I venture into that, I think I asked that the CEO yay or nay, and I think his explanation suffices. Thanks.
Chair, perhaps let me address I still put the offer to say where I am required to put details on the initial question that was asked. To outline the real story behind it, the facts and the numbers, I can provide them offline or at any point that I need to submit. The part I need to therefore respond to is the issue of digital that is being raised. SAA today, we acquire customers through travel agents as a channel as well as digital platform. Only 15% of our revenues are coming from digital channels, which is an anomaly in terms of the global practice. When you have a skewed relationship like that, it costs you more. So the facts that are being presented here are correct. If I'm able to switch more to digital, I would achieve better savings on the distribution side. The challenge we have is that the technology platform is a bit ancient. The app, correctly so, is less of an app, but more of a website on a mobile phone. What we are doing is restructuring that in the background. We've already asked the teams to focus on that. The issue of capacity constraints in digital is one of the things I've zoomed in immediately to say there's not enough people who are focusing on digital, including data science. So we are building that capacity. The CIO that is coming in 1 May is coming from a strong digital environment, from a banking sector to support the airline. We're expecting a lot more focus on digital, on technology to enable us to be firstly, more customer engagement, two, save cost, but at the same time, be more profitable, because we'll acquire more customers if we're able to use that digital platform, the app as a channel, app as a store. This is one of the key areas that I come from. I come from that background. I know how it should work, and I think with SAA, with putting people, modernizing technology, is one of the key things that will make us successful. It's a priority. If we don't do it, we will not succeed in the plans that we are putting in the table.
Okay. I want to go to Brother Seth, Comrade Vincent, Comrade Boy, and 10 seconds, I'm counting. 9.
Can we be, you know, these visa fines which appear in your schedule, can they be explained? Because in almost all your management action taken column, the narrative is that unavoidable fine. But these are astronomical costs when they come total. I'm trying to understand what systems are in place to deal with that particular aspect. Because you can speak about this until it comes home. Why are you not plugging that hole? Because it's evidently there, and you are saying that it's unavoidable. I certainly do not believe that. It's more negligence than unavoidable.
All right. Let me go to Brother Seth. Just keep that question at the back of your mind, because I'm looking at it in the context of your fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And we may need to deal with that as a component alone. Professor?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you know, I just want to echo the sentiments of Honourable Boy. You're here to appear in front of us and answer our questions. And cutting across is not appreciated. Chair, our focus here is public accounts. And I don't think we should get into matters of policy, but let's get into matters of public accounts. Now, in the AG report, there were massive compliance issues. And Chair, like everybody else, I've got a lot of questions today, but I'll move myself. There were massive compliance issues, okay? And I understand that you're a brave new board and you need to forward and do the work yourself. And it's difficult for us to then test you on past issues. But there are major compliance issues. And when we look at your reports, which you've given to us today at page 7, you referred to the fact that you've appointed a service provider, and in brackets, consultant. I don't know if that's the name of the company, if it's just the service provider is a consultant, to assist with audit findings and then to assist with internal controls. So my question really is, and this is what will help me test you now today as to whether you are serious about fixing this AA. And we come back to my old favourite passion, and that's internal audit, or internal audit division. Now, I'm concerned when I see you appointed a service provider in a massive organisation like SAA to assist you effectively with your internal audit function and your SEM process. And that all falls under the umbrella of internal audit. So I've always regarded my level of assurance when I ask the accounting officer, tell me about your internal audit function. Tell me about your team. How many people are there? What sort of qualifications they have? What sort of resources are you going to be giving them to do their work under a wide range umbrella of compliance with the PFMA, the PPP, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to make sure things are in the Companies Act, to make sure things are done properly. If you can just give us some detailed information on what you're doing with the internal audit function and how that is going to help you take forward. Because frankly, if you can't give us that detailed information, and if you are, or alternatively, if you are still putting that together, I think we're going to be here again next year with the same sorry tale. Effectively, where you actually should be in a rescue plan and selling SAA for R1 and just getting out of it. That's where you probably should be. But anyway, let's see if there is any hope for the future. And then can you tie that up with the fact that you brought consultants in? And this is the second leg of my argument, is if you are putting together an internal audit function, why are you using consultants? And are you telling me in that massive monolith that you have there, you don't have the right capacity of people to put together a well-functioning internal audit board. Sorry, that's comments on that in general. Thank you.
Chair, I will address this, and I think Shakula will also add. Firstly, we have an internal audit function. However, in terms of the resourcing, it's not fully capacitated. Both, it's not fully capacitated. We have to enable them to build capacity, both in terms of the number of people and specialized auditing competence. So, for example, IT audit capability is very specialized. Technology, you use a lot of technology to actually enhance the work of the internal audit. Systems that helps to actually analyze digitally, do the profiling of the portfolio without really going into manual, we have to put in place. So we have the people in terms of capability as well as that is various skills in the audit function, competencies, plus also just the sheer number of people that we need to put in as well as systems. So that's the one thing on the audit side. The area of consultants we're bringing in, it is clear that internal audit will flag things is almost like a second level of assurance before you go external. When they flag processes or they pick up snags internally before AG or any external audit, management must be able to respond to those things and build robust systems so that these things do not happen. It is not the expectation that internal audit will go and fix. They analyze based on compliance. What you have in SAA today is that on the finance side, the capacity to deal with the backlog of many years and quickly get us up to speed doesn't exist. So the consultants are supporting the finance function to deal with all the issues, including SCM, that have been flagged by internal audit as well as AG. So these are the two dimensions. I must say, Chair, I would want to have answered differently. We are building skills at SAA. SAA is depleted of skills, so we have to build. This is the reality. But we are pacing ourselves very fast by getting short-term injection of skills so that we stabilize the environment whilst we're getting people either trained to do the right thing, also getting skills in terms of the new recruits. So it's a construction house, if you can say.
All right. Jay, I'll be done with this. Give us a commitment right here, right now, as to when internal audit function will be up and running. Give us that commitment now, because otherwise, just talk shop, and we'll be back here next year.
There are two instruments, and Siakula will respond. There are two instruments that you could use to build any organization. Before I can even give that commitment, I also want to bring to the members of the committee that SAA as a brand today doesn't sell to top skills, given what's happening in the public. It's a reality. If you want to recruit top skills from outside, you struggle. You have to put your own personal commitment and vision about almost like going to interviews to sell a story because the brand doesn't sell. No one wants to leave a good job and come and work for SAA. That's been my experience. So it's harder to recruit into SAA top skills. So I need to flag this because I want to be honest and transparent. So the method of sourcing skills in SAA, not just internal, but in a number of areas, we're using a three-pronged approach. One, we continue to recruit top skills that are coming from experience. In the short term, we provide industrial support from short-term consultants who can support us. Thirdly, where we can get interim executives, retired risk people, retired CFOs who could come and do the leadership part whilst we're recruiting for long-term candidates. So they close the gap. Three instruments we're using. Now, Siakula, part of it we have discussed around budget. You have two options. You either cost source the other part. That's what we have discussed. Is it going to be complete cost source or complete outsource? Where we talk about cost source, the current team we have, plus injecting skills and competence of the audit firms. Also keeping in mind that it's hard to keep pace to all the skills if you are fully insourcing the audit function, because most of the firms have got the ability to develop this. Siakula, maybe you can respond.
No. I think the final bit needs you. He's asking about time frames. Do you have, even if it's a blurred time frame, we hear that SAA still has some issues in terms of attracting top skills, but what is the vision? Are we going to have this forever or what?
Chair, I was just conferring with the Siakola because we enabled him to do this. Within 3 months, you will have had all the, it may not necessarily be full-time skills, but he will get the temporary skills to support him whilst he is recruiting, because we did enable him budget. In the next 3 months, within 3 months, you will have the capacity to close the gap in the audit function.
Good. Chair, just finally, if this board had put together a proper turnaround plan right now, they would have been able to give me that date immediately without this long explanation. Because in your turnaround plan, you would have said, we've got a problem with the internal audit function, we need to fix this by such a time. You weren't able to tell me that. Now your colleague is telling you, in 3 months' time, temporarily. I'm not convinced, and I think we'll see you next year with the same story, and hopefully then you'll decide to sell it. Thanks.
Great present. Yeah, it's you, and then it will be him after you.
No, Chair, I want to take a slightly different stance. You know, I've been sitting and listening to this discussion, and we've been talking to management. I want to remind the board that they are the accounting authority, and not management. And that's why I'm agreeing with what Tim is saying now, that maybe management must, or the board must come being able to answer the question. This thing of internal audit, we shouldn't be asking the internal audit manager. We should be saying to the accounting authority, you've got a problem. And go to page 103 of your report, and the Auditor General tells you you've got a problem. So I'm putting it to you as the accounting authority. And most specifically to Mr. Musa. Because you are the chair of the audit committee, and you've been in this position since September 2016. Unless you get your act together, sir, we are duty-bound to say that as a board member, you are becoming derelict of your duties. Unless you get your act together as the chair of audit committee, we are duty-bound to say you're not doing your job as a director. So I think that's how we should be approaching it here, because the Auditor General on page 103 says, for all the irregular expenditure of, I think the irregular expenditure is 40 or 126, the unauthorized or 40. There's no evidence of investigations that have been done. I'm going back to what Saki was saying. Now that must be a responsibility of the accounting authority. If you're unable to say to us what investigations and what consequence managements have been carried out for irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, then the board has got a problem, sir. The board has got a problem. So I just thought I wanted to put that on the table, so that says, going forward, the accounting authority must come to scope for understanding that we are going to ask them the questions, and the CEO and his team will be your support staff. What investigations have been done, sir, for the 126 million rand for irregular expenditure? And what investigation has been done for the 40 million of fruitless expenditure? Has there been any investigations done, is the question that I'm asking. And if there were, when were they done?
Chair, I don't know who must respond. Is it a response is expected from me, or is...
Yeah, respond.
Okay. Chair, I must tell you, I don't believe we've been derelict in our duties. If you find so, then fine. We're happy to leave the force. But I think
Well, no one is suggesting that.
Yeah, no.
They're
but
saying that if you have a persistent problem...
Yeah. Yes, no. I just thought I wanted to reject the assertion that we are derelict in our duty.
Yeah, I'm responding to that. I'm saying no one is saying you're derelicting. All he's saying is that if you're there as a board and there's a problem...
Yeah.
There's a problem. I'm just... Every time I talk, somebody is making noise this side. If there's a problem that persists and the board is unable to resolve it, then he's saying we'll be forced to say you are derelicting on your duties because that's your responsibility to fix it. So,
Chair,
so at this stage, that's not a finding.
Chair, insofar as the irregular expenditure and the fruitless and wasteful expenditure is concerned, the information that's in the back that the matter is ongoing, that management is addressing it, is the current position where we find ourselves. There might be a further update. Management are closer to these matters. We meet as an audit committee 4 times a year where we get updates. So currently, if there's any forensic investigations into the irregular and fruitless expenditure, I'm not aware of it. I think there's a lot around the fruitless and irregular expenditure of a year that relates to a pattern at SAA, and that is that they haven't been able to retrieve information for the AG to conclude an audit finding. And so far as some of the other matters are concerned, there have been contracts that have been awarded where procedure wasn't properly followed. I'm not aware that forensics have been specifically engaged to investigate those matters. Where I am aware that we've had forensic investigations is where open waters have been engaged at SAA Technical, and that matter is now at rich fruition where there's a couple of disciplinary steps that are being taken. But specifically on your question, I'm not aware that there are investigations.
Okay.
Chair, let me just, and I didn't say you were derelict. I said we would be forced to do that. But let me just remind you, Mr. Musa, the PFMA requires that you do that investigation. It's not me asking you. The PFMA says you are required to do an investigation. And you're saying to me you're not aware that investigations have been done. And then you expect me or us as Parliament to turn around and say, well done. Well, we're not going to do that. You're not complying to the PFMA, and therefore if I say to you I don't think you're doing your duty as a board member, I'm entitled to say that. Thank you, Chair.
All right, Comrade Boy.
I'm also not going to law. CEO, looking at your board and looking at your group executive, and your earlier comment about human resource, I see some of them are running at 70 years old and others are running at 69 years old. So are you saying to us that experience, what are they there for, people of that caliber, of that age in your board or in your competitor? What value are they adding? What is their background? Why would you have such old people in your board? And my last question, Dr. Ron, you're going to be here for quite some time. What happened to women in your board? I just see a delegation of men. Is there something wrong with women in your organization, or what happened? Because last time when we were there at the South African Airways, we saw a lot of women highly active, playing particular roles. Now I'm surprised I don't see them here. What would you say is the problem? They are not adding value to your organization. You see, why I'm raising these small questions is because I'm trying to understand, you have got a good Pagama strategy outside there. But you see, one thing that I must tell you, we are getting frustrated by flights that are not consistent with the sort of things. There's nothing that seems to be, your strategy is not impacting on what happened domestically. And we are beginning to complain, all of us, what is the value of you asking us to become Voyager members and patriots in South Africa and want to add value to the South African Airways when I'm going to start at the airport. And then I resort to go to the British Airways and give my support to them. Is that what you are therefore coming to contribute to get us to be removed from the South African Airways and go and assist the business of the British Airways? Is that your strategy? I'll leave it there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The board that we have, obviously the board is the domain of the shareholder, but the board that we have is diverse. It's got gender diversity. It's got aviation skills. And it's very, very helpful in governance and oversight. What we have done is to the board members that are with us, largely they serve in the Risk and Audit Committee. Tomorrow, what SCOA, the deputy chair of the board, and the chair of the LTTS, Swazi Chabalala, both of them are women, will be at SCOA or would be have to be at SCOA. So we do have diversity at the board. It's just the configuration we have today on the issue of diversity. On the gender issue broadly in SAA, it's high on my agenda in terms of the broader transformation, getting more women at the EXCO. The chief commercial officer who appointed last month is a black female, Pumla Duabe. We've got Zooks Ramesia, who runs the core operations of the business. So those people are women, and we've got Lusanda on the corporate affairs. So there is diversity at the EXCO level, Chair. On the issue of the domestic market, this is where, Chair, I would want to offer when the committee, if all is permitted, is permissible, we have an opportunity to present the long-term turnaround strategy of SAA, because strategy is about trade-offs at times. When you have no liquidity altogether and all your flights that you are flying consistently are digging yourself deeper and deeper into the hole, you do tactical moves that seeks to keep you on in the game. And these are the kinds of conversation we would like to present to the committee. Obviously, we take input and move forward. So I would want to present, because the domestic strategy is based on our circumstance and what we see in the market, as well as keeping that we've got both Mango and SAA as a master brand. So I would be keen to walk through the committee in terms of the thinking and why we have to do the things that we've done today and what are the results that we're seeing. We are quite cognizant that the market might be a bit tight in terms of capacity to put on the market for SAA, but we're matching the competitor pound for pound, and we would like to share with the committee the detail and get further input.
All right. Comrade Mente, and then Honorable Lee.
You are saying that unanswered, as you say, what are you complaining? Because it's unanswered, it's not answered. He says you want to have a session where we talk alone the whole day. What are you recommending?
I think if there's one part that is outstanding, it's around efficiency of operations. I don't know if you want to talk to that now rather than later, because I think that is what make a person decide on Thursday whether it's flying SAA or they're going to fly some other nameless entities.
Chair, perhaps if I attempt to answer the question, the experience that we have today is as a result of rebalancing capacity in the domestic market, where we put more capacity on Mango vis-a-vis SAA, largely because every flight that takes off to Mango by far is profitable compared to SAA. Now, when you don't have a credit line or any form of funding, what you then do to keep you going whilst you're getting better organized, you do things that are going to not to dig the hole deeper and deeper, you deeper into the hole. So we have tightened the market, the supply in the SAA platform in the domestic market. We know that the customers who would want to fly at SAA every 15 to 30 minutes, today are not able to do that. They are stretched to an hour. And because of capacity constraints, part of the decisions also informed by the fact that aircraft, which are narrow bodies, left SAA as a result of the going concern and liquidity issues last year. So the capacity to execute in terms of the aircraft narrow bodies that are of the right economics is limited. We have had to take the big engine, four engine aircraft that fly internationally. We have to take them out of the market, because if you fly them from Joburg to Cape Town,
by the time they land here, you must also borrow money to put fuel into them because they are not geared for this kind of market. Now, when you are facing a situation like that, you make decisions that are tactical. Is it painful to the customers? Yes. Is it a long-term strategy? No. It's tactical. Ultimately, we'll rebalance as we get back into a good shape and position. But what we struggled with is it was difficult to stay in the current platform when you have options which may not be liked by most customers because you want to fly every 30 minutes, every 15 minutes. It's good. People are accustomed to that. But it costs money. It's what is sinking 17 billion rands on SAA. So we have had to make strategic choices, which we're happy to get feedback.
Okay. Oh, that's fine. Well, I think it goes back to the earlier question around leasing and buying. I think that's the bigger conversation that must still happen. Commitment, and then honorable lease.
Okay, Chairperson, one thing that SCOPA is at a disadvantage of is the fact that we deal with things that have already happened. And then it's an advantage to a department, entity, or whoever comes to account that they are going to blame it in the past. They are going to blame it to history. They are going to blame it to whoever did it. We all sat here and blamed Dudumieni for sinking the ship. But Dudumieni was not working alone. She had managers which she issued unlawful instructions to. And unfortunately, CEO, you are sitting with those managers here. The fact that today a gentleman behind you says he's not sure if the investigation has taken place or not, and yet right in front of us, Comrade Vincent, we have spreadsheets of investigation. So which one do we believe? Did the investigation take place of what transpired during history? Or were the investigations not done? What is it? Did they happen or not, CEO?
Chair, the investigations were done. So in the list of what is in this schedule, there are a number of, if you talk about wasteful and fruitless expenditure, you will see a number of items on visa fine. Each has been investigated. There are those that where disciplinary has not been taken on. But if you look at the schedule,
right,
what we've written here is statement of fact.
Fine. Investigations have happened. That was the question. Investigation. Yes, comrade.
Okay. Now we can then start referring to the schedule you have given us. In page 103, once again, the AG is complaining of leadership. The last paragraph of the integrated report. And he cites different categories where leadership is lacking. Amongst other things is the IT, the HR, and etc. The Audit Risk Committee. In your presentation that you've given us, you have outsourced investigations on some of the things that the Auditor General has been querying you about. And that can only indicate one area, that your human resources not having ability or capacity to investigate. Now you have to outsource, spend money that you do not have. Was that an option that you had that time? Or is this going to be a long-term thing that you will outsource people to investigate your own people? Or is it because the very same managers that must investigate are implicated in the cases that must be investigated? Which one is it? Is it lack of capacity, or is that you are also suspecting that the same people are involved?
Chair, in the case of the audit outcomes, the reason why we're outsourcing it is purely a lack of capacity and capability. When it comes to the forensics, it's a different reason. But for this specific question, it's capacity and capability. In finance, we just don't have
capability, that is capacity to quickly deal with the challenges in the shortest space of time.
What?
And when the internal audit, in fact, when Auditor General indicated that there was a serious violation of the PFMA, in particular Section 50, 51, and 55, which govern the procurement policies of South Africa where our fiscus is concerned. What happened to all of those that were picked up to have violated those rules and regulations? Do you fire anyone? If so, who are they?
Right, thanks very much. Liz, but let's get the response first to the question.
Chair, we have not fired anyone. We are still looking at the investigation. If you look at the violation of the PFMA, I'll go to basic. Let's go back to the Fruitless and Western Electronics. Let's say visa fine. I need to investigate, was it our own person or was it, for example, somebody flies with a visa that's proper and then there's no work permit that gets sent back, then we get charged visa fines. So we are still investigating who must be charged, and so that we want to be prudent in approach. With the short answer, we're investigating who must be held accountable for this. We have not yet charged anybody, to be honest.
No, just one interesting area. On the schedule you've given us, first line, disciplinary action was taken against Naledi Khumalo. She was dismissed. But the second person, on the very same charge, is issued a final written warning. Phyllis Bennett is given a final written warning, but Naledi Khumalo is dismissed. What's the difference? You charge people for the same thing, but you have different sanctions. And secondly, who did not pick up that what line is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth line. A person resigns before being investigated, and then the internal audit did not pick up that this person has been fraudulently accessing the system and paying people irregularly. The person then leaves. Now nothing can happen because the person has resigned already. Before anything happens to her, then when the Auditor General, because your internal audit has no capacity to pick up things, you only report to us that nothing can be done because she has left. You must go and get our money from her pension.
Chair, if I can respond, what has happened, actually, we also identified, also with the assistance of the AG, that there's been inconsistency of application in terms of consequence management. So what we have done, we have actually worked with our security people and legal to beef up our PFMA compliance policy so that it can give delegations in terms of who needs to do what. For example, when it comes to investigations on certain matters, our security people will do the investigations, which are not that serious, especially when it comes to fraud or stealing. And the other issue was that the compliance department, including the CEO, will also have power if they see that when a report is submitted on either irregular, fruitless, and wasteful spend, it's found that there was no consequence management, and management has not done it, or maybe there was inconsistency in terms of applying the consequence management. The policy then allows that either the CEO or the compliance department will then issue consequence management to the general manager concerned.
So the policy has been revised with the assistance of the AG and with security and legal. So it will be tabled at the EXCO for approval.
All right. Honorable Lynn.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a really quite a short one. We the 10 billion bailout was completed by the 31st of March. Please confirm that it was. And then in the new financial year in which we're in now, there was provision made, I think, for 4.8 billion to be paid to you. When will you need the first of that 4.8 billion? Is it this week, next week? When will the next payment be required in order to prevent SAA from grinding to a halt?
So it's correct, the 10 billion rand, the balance of the 4 billion rand was paid in December, and all that money went to pay, well, about 7.6 of that money went to pay lenders out of the 10 billion. So the 2.4 was supporting working capital requirements coming in tranches and SAA. Today, we are at the point where, keeping in mind that SAA has no credit line, and we have a cash ban, that is, there's a gap between revenue and expenses, we do need access to capital to sustain the operations, and we've been having discussions with the treasury as well as the banks around how we have a open credit line to support whilst we're working through the oversight committee on the fully fledged capital structure for SAA. Because we've done the long range plan with a break even point in 2021, we have defined the financial consequences of that plan. We've presented that through the corporate plan to the shareholder. The shareholder, working with the board through the joint oversight committee, are working on the capital structure, which talks to the funding mix for SA. What is the optimal mix to fund SA to break even point?
Let's do this. He says, when will you need the next injection? Now.
Yes,
okay, good. The next question.
Yours. Thanks. I think that's. I mean, that's what I wanted to understand. So that's fine. Thank you very much for the frank answer.
All right, Comrade Kuno, Comrade Chilwane, and then Ross, and then we're done.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I was a little bit worried earlier on when the CEO answered, and I don't think he saw any problem with that. I need to have an understanding on your technical supervision. I mean, when you talked about the Brazil example of having those TVs not working and somebody, and it, I mean, it didn't happen once or twice. It's happening occasionally. When are you beefing up the technical supervision? How is your technical supervision? I mean, we're spending a lot of money. There's so many things that you can do to minimize costs, but I don't think SAA wants to do that. If you have any plans of minimizing costs, the forensics, for instance, is part of minimizing costs.
No,
the
no,
forensics
no.
That you've been doing year in, year out. You are not the first person to do forensics. Before you, other chairpersons, they've done forensics. We're paying a lot of money doing all these forensics. What then do you do with all the information that you get from all the investigations? What is your plan in terms of minimizing costs? That's my first question. Can I go to the second one? Okay.
No, go to the second question.
The second one, I'm not sure if you're hearing us emphasizing the staff problem. Your staff is great disgruntled. Went to SAA, they were, you know, crying because nobody's taking them serious. They don't have a platform where they can echo their frustrations to anyone. Let me tell you what happens when a flight is delayed or you cancel flights. You won't feel it because you are in offices or all over, wherever you are. But the people who are feeling it it's the staff. Because as passengers, who do we go and you know, say all sorts of things to the staff? That is why instead of them being committed, they will, they're not going to be committed to anything because you're not doing anything to revise them. And the last part on minimizing the cost, Chairperson, is your pilot. That's what we found out when we went there. From the internal auditor, he also told us when we went there, and some of the staff members. You, it's like pilots is the main thing that you think SAA should have. With all the problems that you have, you are thinking, but then you are paying them anything that is above market-related salaries. No pilot in any aircraft has salaries that you are giving. So that's why, Chairperson, it's very important for us to understand what are you doing to minimize costs that SAA is heavy. Thanks, sir.
All right.
I'll be concise. Firstly, on the in-flight entertainment system, when you have old aircraft, you get to a point where the equipment on that aircraft is no longer supported by the OEM. For example, if you have a TV that is old, blaupunkt, it will not be supported today, and you have to get a particular manufacturer to produce a part to support it. When you do that, then your system is not sustainable. You're going to have many failures, even when you have technicians to fix. It's a product of where you are with your product. Once your product is gone out of support roadmap, you always make arrangements to get parts. That's what you have at SAA today in terms of the on-flight entertainment system. We have plans, we've done the business case, where we look at the weight of the old entertainment system vis-a-vis a new one, where you feel that you have you get the number to say the economics adds up, it can pay itself by just reducing the payload on the aircraft. Those studies are being done today where you get to a cash neutral way of modernizing the in-flight entertainment on board the flight. So,
are you justifying the fact that you are paying millions and it's okay in Brazil, it's okay to pay millions
because
you're using the old stock?
No, Chair. All the point I'm making is that we're doing everything to make sure we fix the aircraft. Before an aircraft leaves, there's a pre-departure check by a technician. But by the nature of an old system, it will break. So it's not going to be like the new systems that we have. And when they break, it takes time to fix it because we have to order parts that are no longer, that are obsolete. So we're doing everything to do the assessment, but the reality of the matter is that with an old car, which will break in the process. So there will be frequency in the propensity to break is higher in the current system. But what I've asked the team to do, and it's not now since I came in, was to do pre-departure check for the long-haul flights so that we can catch the things early before it takes off to minimize the pain of our cabin crew in terms of the kind of challenges they have with customers on board. So we have to pull all stops. I'm just saying, it's a fundamental issue of technology refresh. It's always going to come to us, and we have to manage. The second question around staff, I agree fully. My first engagement, let us say, was with staff. I hold town hall meetings, I hold work groups. They are what we call scrums, which is a group of people focusing on a particular issue. So, for example, they route to Durban. You've got people in Durban working with people in SAA focusing on the particular issue. The issue about on-board services, scripting, they are group across boards, not just executive. It also includes, we have a change hub that drives this. We have developed now an app that allows staff that are on the road, because most of the workforce is an absent workforce, it's cabin crew, it's pilots who are all over the world, but they've got input to give. Now, they don't always have email and the ability to talk, so we've developed the app that we're going to be launching on 15th of May, where we're going to broadcast and talk to them. They'll give us feedback.
No, the question is, you have pilots who are overpaid vis-a-vis the state of SAA or the state of our economy.
I'm going to
the area that everyone is getting to touch. That's the question. So don't circle around it. Just go straight to it, because that's the number of the questions. The other issues are truly
I thought, Chair, there were three questions. I was going to the third one. Let me go to the issue of pilots.
We have been engaging since I came in with SAA across all categories of the workforce. We're doing benchmarks globally. There are a number of areas that are challenging with regards to penalty pilots outside just the salary. One of the key things is how we create an enabling environment where I can get more productivity to get them to fly more hours so that I can get a return on investment that is higher. Now, all those are regulated, are constrained by the agreement that SAA has with the pilots called the regulating agreement. It does put certain constraints about things that they can do and things they cannot do. We have been in discussions with them on the 2nd and 3rd of May. We're in a workshop with the pilots looking at the aspect of the regulating agreement. The approach I've adopted, Chair, is that of getting people of SAA to find solutions with me. But this is not endless and without any deadline and timeline. We've been with this second, if not the third, it's the third workshop with the pilots we're having on the 2nd and 3rd, 2-day workshop.
Puyo, this is the fiscus, it's not your money, Akokwe. On a workshop, how much are you spending to make those people do? Because the question is very simple and straight. There's a lot of money you're spending on certain people. That's all you want to hear. Why do you do that? I was telling about workshop, how much is it additional that workshop? How much is it going to cost us? Or is it going to go to Mauritius? What is the other executive challenge? That we must accept that people that are overpaid. While the auditor general says, you don't have efficient people that even understand the pilot industry. That's what the auditor general says. Now we want to hear that, why do you pay people? You've got the board of pensioners there. What is it that they're doing with? This is all she wants you to help us. And we're trying to listen to you.
All right. Okay. No, that's fine. If that's your answer, that's fine, because that's what you're doing. We may agree, we may not agree with you, but
Chair, we have contracts that exist. There are agreements that exist. These agreements are legal until you unwind them differently. These are employment contracts. Even if I carry the view, I would not unilaterally say take that view and take today. This is the part of the dialogue that we're going through to get to an outcome that we are going to create. It's 5 months of engagement.
I think one should have maybe
Chair, can I come in on the same subject?
No,
on the issue of the pilots.
Yeah, I'll come back to you. If the issue is the contract, let's say so. But you see, the moment you say you are having workshops with people to try and bring them, I mean, you know, it's almost as if it does not show that, you know, you have a full grasp of things, or maybe we're not yet new to these management processes. But because you have to understand the pressure or the frustration inside. We're talking about going concern and the losses and the liabilities and all that kind of stuff. So it would have helped us say, look, there are contracts that have been entered into, and this is the scope of the contract. Between now and then, our hands are tied. But this is where we want to go. And it gives us a sense that there's an appreciation of what the issues are.
No, China, I wanted to give you to be the last. But I want to speak on this.
Yeah, you'll speak on anything.
Okay.
I want to give you to be the last. It's Comrade Chilwane, then it's Ross, and then you'll be the last.
Chairperson, thank you. I want to talk to the issue of the action. If we can go a little bit to that one. Because if you check in terms of the report of the aging, HF have regressed in terms of their findings. But one issue that the AG is mentioning is the issue of the contract management, which I believe these are the companies that are doing the work for the HF. I wanted to establish with you, CEO, how many companies are are doing work for a church, and how long have they been doing it? Chairperson, if maybe my questions relate a lot of information, they can send it, but maybe I wanted to put it in this way. I don't know when are we going to meet SAA again, because for me today I feel that we're just discussing, we didn't get, I think I just felt so frustrated in terms of the, not necessarily that we're not getting answers, but I think I don't feel the energy in terms of the engagement that we're having. So, because I'm asking this question, Chairperson, in terms of how many contracts do you have, who's doing what, and what is the role of business? Is it one of the service providers of HF? And who's doing this cooking? Chairperson, it's going to be like an ill-informed question, but I think I have to ask. You know, yesterday when we were flying from OR, we were served with pizza. Pizza. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm complaining, but, you know, these are things that, you know, you just ask yourself. And I said, no, I'm going to ask the CEO because we're meeting them today. The food is just so terrible. If you have paid your business class ticket and you are being served with pizza or nothing, then it means that you're technically flying without eating anything, but you have paid for. So I'll pass on that one, Chairperson. My second question is on investigation. This list that you have mentioned, the list that you have given us, the 5 investigations. What happened to the investigation of ARS? Is it part of this investigation? And if it's not, what is the progress report in that investigation? There's also an investigation that is being mentioned by the AG that has taken 18 months. It relates to the issue of cargo theft. I want to briefly also talk about that one, because when the chairperson of the board spoke earlier, he said they are receiving information from anonymous people who are complaining. I think also as members of parliament, we do receive information when we come to this meeting to say, can you please raise this issue on our behalf? But this one, when you check it, it says there's a syndicate within the airline that deals with cargo theft. And it also says that it is alleged that syndicate members are members of SAA who are enjoying very high lifestyle beyond their own payment offered to them by the SAA. And it's taking too long, 18 months, and people are losing most of their things, and there's no response. And I can believe that even if that's why, Chairperson, you've got an issue of losses in the revenue. Because you've got to pay people, but at the same time, you're investigating, you're taking too long. If we can talk about that one, Chairperson. I have so many questions. I've actually noted many questions when my colleagues were asking, but because of time, Chairperson, I think maybe I'll really appeal to you that we really need to meet with them again as soon as possible, so that we are able to ventilate on issues that have been raised by the AG. There are so many, Chairperson, sure. We haven't even touched the order of them.
All right. Sure. Can I get a response?
The list of suppliers for airships, I would humbly ask that we submit them, the list with the clear category that's articulated. Bidvest is one of the ground handling and the staff to the aircraft suppliers at SAA. We have a contract with them. The issue of food, Chair, I want to take it as feedback, because I did also get feedback about food from Mauritius yesterday, that we may have to do something there. I take it as a feedback, which I would like to feedback on what I'm going to do to improve it. I got feedback from one of the customers on yesterday. The AR investigation is part of the open water report, which we have started dealing with portions of it through the suspensions, and the CR will just cover in detail because he handles those investigations, including the cargo scenario.
The investigation on open water, by open water, it was finalized, and we looked at the AAR matter. Already, I think I spoke earlier about the letters of intention to suspend people. Some of the things that people will be suspended for relates to this to AAR. But as much as the report was finalized, when we compared all the other investigations, we did identify that there were questions that were still not answered by the investigation. For example, I think a question of who is GEM Aviation. GEM Aviation is a BE partner working with AAR. The report was not really clear. All what it did, it told us about the people who are directors at GM Aviation, but we wanted to know who else beyond just the people who are listed at the CIPC. So the report is not really specific as far as that is concerned. The introduction of, for example, AAR to SAA. So we've listed, I think, in one of our reports, the questions that were not answered by the report, but already what we were given, we could start acting on, and we're already acting on the things that have been identified by the report. We've called back Open Water to come and try and do additional work to answer these specific questions that we felt were not answered. Regarding cargo investigation, that one, I mean, from internal audit side, I must be honest, I don't know of a cargo theft investigation that has been conducted for 18 months. The whistleblower report, I did get it, I think, in less than a month ago, and it's one of the investigations that I was planning to do. I was really not aware that there was already an investigation that has been there for 18 months. It's something that I will go back and check there, because there is no one else who should do an investigation other than me, unless if there has been maybe an actual loss that has been identified by business, then our security people will go and look into that specific
loss. Right. Okay. No, that's fine. Don't be share that briefing note from the AG, or at least that page, item number 9, which lists the investigation that she was talking. But I think, like I was saying, like you were saying, I think there's just so much to talk about. We may need to package it. Ross?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, liquidity and solvency problems is worse than expected. It seems that the 9.2 billion rand of debt cannot be repaid by SAA, and that there's ongoing capital injections from the shareholder. And certainly it is a huge drain on the fiscus. Now, what is the terms and conditions of these capital injections? It seems that we've moved beyond the issue of guarantees and loans from banks. It seems that it's just a capital injection to keep the going concern status in place. And I think my question leans towards the shareholder in this regard, to give us some guidance in terms of what the drag on the fiscus is. And secondly, my recommendation, or also a question that leans towards the shareholder, is international best practice, where we've seen the Ethiopian Airlines has recorded a profit of 4.4 billion rand. But there's a clear distinction between the ownership and management functions of this airline. It's 100% state-owned, but management is a complete separate entity, and they don't take instructions from politicians, so to speak. And it's very interesting also, they don't give special tariffs to their biggest customers like the state and Ethiopia. And you can perhaps look at those models. And then in terms of the interventions required, what would your position be? And we've looked at the solvency issue, we've looked at the international best practice issue on business rescue proposals. Because it's quite clear that the shareholder yourself should give permission before there could be any such application from the board. And then the debt relief and turnaround strategy, of course, that's very important, but certainly that needs to be done before we can even consider some dismantling of SAA. And I think we've spoken about this, Chairperson, in terms of the IT structure, that there was an indication that it might be disposed of, or that we can source in more competent people in that regard. But private equity intervention can only be achieved once we achieve the turnaround strategy. And perhaps these different issues and interventions, as I've proposed, what would your view be on that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Were you asking the Deputy Minister or the CEO? All right, I'm sure he is. Great. Yeah. Completely kind.
No, Chair. Mine is, we have agreed as a committee that we are winding up. And when we took that decision, we consciously looked at the departments that we have seen. And SAA was part and parcel of that. That is why we are saying, let's deal with the issues that were raised in the two hearings that we had, so that we close that loop. But for us to start on new things is going to be a problem. Now, my proposal would be, Chair, let's come up with a very clear program or timelines on the responses on the issues that we have raised. For instance, the one that I was dealing with, SAA commissioned that is companies to look at particular issues, the report on that, so that we close that one. It should be a report and the recommendations. Please don't provide us with one liner, because what we need a comprehensive report. Your officials can come up with that is, if it is an executive summary, it would still be a problem. Give us a comprehensive report that would talk to those issues, because when we met with you, we raised that certain issues. Now, when you come back to us and give us a one-liner, it still raises that is some questions. Now, what we are saying, for us to close that loop, please give us a report on all those issues. For instance, the issue that my colleague was raising on the issue of the pilot, it is in your report here, but it does not cover that is what she's saying. The report only indicates that, no, they are the best paid that is in the industry. And there's some comparison here that is on the pilots. But it does not give us a sense as to what are you then doing in terms of these issues. That's just one example. Because, Chair, if we are saying we are still going to have an engagement with SAA, the question is, it would be contrary to our decision. Our term is ending very soon. And we are saying, let's close all these issues and let's make sure that the people who are coming, we can then be in a position to provide them with a report. As to these are the issues that we have dealt with SAA, and this is the recommendation that SAA gave us. Because what I said earlier on, you don't get a sense that there's direction. Because all what we are saying, that is a scoffer. Other people think that we just want to embarrass people. That's not the idea. The idea is to assist the department, that is to deal with all these issues. Because at the end, we are also responsible, that is for what we are doing, that is to the general public. Now, it is our responsibility that if there is anything wrong that we see, that is as a parliament, we need to sharply raise it with you, so that as a team, we can be in a position that is to build confidence. We are saying we have taken a conscious decision, some of us, that we are going to fly SAA. But when you arrive at the airport, you are only told that the flight is cancelled. You have to, stay at the airport for something like 2 to 3 hours. Now the question is, what confidence that is are you building in the industry? Because we are so jealous. We'll have to, at times,
that is to form at the airport to move from SAA, that is to PA. And unfortunately, that's what we don't want. We want to support, that is SAA, because we are saying we are patriotic, that is to our country. Now, all what we are saying, please assist us. When we raise issues, provide us with answers, so that as a team, we can be in a position to march forward. Thank you, Chair.
All right. That's fine. Comrade Deputy Minister, I want to hand over to you. Safe to say that like I said at the beginning, it's a very, very grave situation that we're in. And we said we want to work with you to find solutions, to identify the areas of challenge. Now, if you look at the annual report, there are losses, financial losses. And I don't know whether an analysis has been done over where do these losses come from, why did they happen, through whose omission or commission that these losses were suffered. I would imagine that's the first area to close the losses. So even if government injects money into SAA, if you are having continuous losses, and secondly, your areas of expenditure, because you're generating revenue of 30 billion, but your expenditure costs are beyond. Where are your areas of high expenditure? And then, you know, isolate those and start to, I would imagine, those are the first things that we need to do. So when you come to Parliament, demonstrate that you have a full grasp of the issues. See, this is what is creating our problems, and this is how we are dealing with it. And for me, one other issue that you may need to consider is it an appropriate model that you have a board of SAA, and then you have these subsidiaries which have their own boards and their own management, and especially the ones that are bleeding you dry, SA Technical and SA Chefs. And CEO, I'll tell you, my sense is that those are the nests of the rot at SAA. And so far, all the boards and all the CEOs have feared to go into that jungle. Plain and simple. All of them have failed to go into that jungle. Even ourselves, when we visited, those are the two areas we're not able to go to. And you look at the annual report, those two, they are the ones that are worse. So let's not skate around. Those are the two areas. But I'm saying, is it an appropriate arrangement that they should have their own boards and then have their own management as separate entities? Or should they be divisions within SAA, so that you hold them with a shorter leash and leaving them at a distance out there? And the AR investigation, I remember when we were there, you were supposed to give the accused, which included your acting CEO, an opportunity to respond to the allegations, and we were supposed to have that report. We haven't had it. I'm sure, Comrade Kekana, if we have any further future engagement, those reports we'll need to get the full reports ourselves and whatever summary they can give, so we can also go over them. The evergreen contracts, Comrade Boy, they must talk to that man, because you remember the ESCOM evergreen contracts. They said they will be contacting us, almost May now. Since we met them in January, they haven't said anything. So we don't know whether they are still investigating or they have stalled. Same thing here. I see your list of evergreen contracts. I'm thinking we may need to get a report from you. When did this contract start? How many times have they been extended? I hope somebody is taking note because Ntombi is writing on my side. How many times have they been extended and how much has so far been paid? And since the last extension is until what year? One of you said some of these don't make sense to you. Who is extending this contract? Who is that person who is extending this contract? One the name. So you say Kumbele Express. It was extended by so and so. So we know the person who actually put pen on paper, because these things don't happen by themselves. It's a human being, it's a person who did them. So would want to. And lastly, Deputy Minister, Ernestine Young. I don't know whether I must get a native doctor to come and find out who has been captured by Ernestine Young. Because when Cheryl Carolus was the chair, I think, we had an issue of Ernestine Young, who after 17 million rand had not done anything well. And they had to cut the contract of Ernestine Young. But I see Ernestine Young is back. Who have they captured? Who have they captured here? So, but I think like my comrade said, there's just too much. Yeah, no. You know, vetting, we call it state security. They have been sleeping on the job. Fraser is no more. We don't know who, you know. And it's not only SAA, even the police, not invested. We went to Transnet, no one has been vetted. And yet, Cabinet took a decision in 2014 that the ethics of all who are in procurement in all levels of the state must be vetted. Nothing has been done. All right, let me hand over to you, Comrade.
But, Chair, ours is a different issue. There was a senior official who refused. And you remember we said we need investigation on that. Because in terms of the contract of that individual, it is a conditional. Now, we wanted SAA to investigate that and come back to us on that order.
Thank you, Chair. Let me appreciate the traditional clinical engagement, usually robust as it is. I thought up front, I want to say this is what I will inculcate and I continue to inculcate, is that we cannot, if we want to succeed, we cannot dispense with this partnership. That's the point I want to make. Ideally, if you think subjectively, if you look at the crisis of SAA as we speak, you would not want to be called by SCOP, because you might be tempted to feel it's a waste of a lot of time, because you want to answer to them at a particular stage. But the kind of questions that are being asked are even improving the nature of interventions that are taking place now. So in other words, the dispensability of SCOPA is just a non-negotiable stuff. So that's why I wanted to say to Honorable Kekana, I wish he doesn't think about the end of the term. As long as he's here, we want to engage vigorously so that we continue to improve our own turnaround strategy. That's the first point I want to make, Chair. The other issue I wanted to raise is that I think it's a known cause now that SAA, the immediate challenge is finance. So you make sense when your immediate intervention is to curtail or to cut losses so that you retrace yourself to a sustainable path. That's the question that SAA has to answer. I think a lot of attempts are being made to do that. And the second issue is because of the degree of the gravity, Chair. The minister commissioned myself to have a team from Treasury to work together with a team from SAA so that on a regular basis we give and immediate attention to the situation. I think we've had a 2 or 3 meetings. A lot of work has been done to that extent. Now, one biggest challenge, which I think I've had, it's been raised even by the Honorable, I feel so embarrassed, I forgot Honorable Ross, is that if you look at the history of ESCOM, there's a lot of lessons to be learned in the success of ESCOM before the current situation. One of the critical things that one reads there is the centrality of a proper governance framework where the board and the shareholder converge, where you balance between government being worried about control and accountability and the board being worried about excellent performance and entrepreneurship, finding a workable relationship. It talks to what Honorable Ross. So the issue of role clarity becomes very important. On the issue of fiscals, to Honorable Ross, what I want to say is that we have got an entity that is owned by the state, which is in a financial crisis. Naturally, ideally, you would set conditions, which we must set, that for us to continue enjoying the parliamentary support to give you money demonstrates that you are conducting yourself in a manner that is taking this thing out of the mud. That is the ultimate, that is the minimum requirement. It is at that point, Chair, where I wanted to propose that, although I agree with humility, Chair, that a number of times SAA come here in Parliament with the limited capacity they have and the nature of challenge they are facing, I wish we could find a way, but it doesn't right away the urgency of us taking you through the LTTS, long-term turnaround strategy, because that will assist to actually eliminate a number of questions that they would not call, that they would raise. And I wish, for merely for that purpose, I don't mind us coming back, just for that purpose, to take your time, take you through the LTTS, because it will actually put us in the common protocol, common space. And I repeat, it will eliminate a number of protocol, a number of questions. So that's a bigger picture. And again, if you look at the shareholder compact that we're actually going through, it will show you that because of the nature of the immediate challenges, the primary focus on the first phase is financial interventions, operational model interventions, and corporate governance intervention, so that you can go and sleep and say the systems are autocore, are in place, sick as this thing is, but it is on a sustainable autocore path. Those are the challenges we're faced with. On the issue of foreign profit, foreign of the space policy, I want to say, Chair, maybe what we need to do, I don't want to try to be clever on this and think that I've got ultimate answers. I think it's a matter that we need to look at the policy as it is. But the point I wanted to make sure is that although the challenge is at the moment, is that whether you deny PA space or you deny anyone a space, the state of SAA at the moment does not determine the demand for flight. Whatever the state SAA is at the moment, it has not changed the demand for people to fly. Now, you have to find a way that whilst you are actually taking yourself out of ICU, how do people continue to actually get served in terms of... Those are some of the balances that... Some of the trade-offs that we need to look at, but the issue of police, I agree, we need to look at and so on. And, Chair, you express your concern about... I'm not going to address everything. A lot of answers have been given. I think a number of times we have been worried about continuity. And I think I share that. What I want to say is that I think primarily the continuity traditional is that it must be how optimal the team performs in a normal environment. What keeps you at work is how you perform. I know at times people have left the system even if they are what caught, even if they are performing. And I want to promise that we will try our best to make sure that if people leave the system, it can be rationally explained. I've got no definite answer, but all what we are going to do is that whilst we are deployed here, the turnaround strategy must actually yield to its intended objectives. And again, on the my last point is that I was listening to the issue of how the progress reports on the AG's findings are being engaged. And I realized that Musa got emotionally affected. And yet a number of answers do exist. But the challenge is the detail that Honorable Kekana has actually raised. To what detail do they exist? And I must be honest, and I didn't cancel the board to say, this is a different committee. Is that if they want information, you must give them everything they want. And I think I must accept a responsibility for not actually raising that. All I want to say, Chair, I propose that what Honorable Kekana is saying, that you send again back to us over and above what you have done before, the deadlines of issues that must be raised. The last point is that this oversight committee has got particular terms of reference. For instance, amongst others, it will determine the optimal structure, capital structure of SAA. The second one is to determine mechanism to implement the optimal capital structure and funding model for SAA. And later it will define a program of implementing all those. And one of the key things that we're working on is a 6 month period, all these oversight. We don't want to run SAA as government, but we want to make sure that at the end of 6 months, they are on a sustainable rail. So now you're on a rail, be on your own, so that be answerable for your failure to perform. By end of August, of September, we want to be out of this. But one of the biggest objectives is to ensure that a mechanism to oversee and monitor the implementation of the turnaround strategy exists beyond the oversight, what you call life. All I'm saying is that we are committed, Chair, to do the best. I've listened to the committee, and they will never come alone here. We'll always be here to accept whatever contribution.
All right. Thanks very much, Comrade Deputy Minister. Mamokwag and your team. We hope that next time we meet, it will still be the same team, so that we continue from here and move forward. We don't start from the beginning all the time. Comrade, welcome back. And thank you very much. tomorrow let's play it by the ear. We may need to meet. I hope they're not listening. I have a little frustration with the